Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I said as the program ended last night that I wasn't quite done with the topic, and I'm not, although a bunch of news has sort of busted out all over the place elsewhere. I still want to do the comparison and contrast between the guy who invaded the Discovery Channel headquarters last night and the manifesto of the Jim David Adkison. The guy who shot up the Unitarian Universalist congregation a couple of years back. Because there's a big difference. On the one hand, there is the guy yesterday that the right-wingers were quick to run out and claim, hey, look, it's a domestic terrorist, and he's a liberal. Of course, he wasn't. Anybody that talks about immigration the way that guy did. Was no liberal. Never mind. But anyway, I think we should do that. On the other hand, a general warning, I suppose, that I don't know how long this will last. No, we don't have any thunderstorms blowing through. This time it's just the tired and sick computer here that runs things production-wise. It needs help. And I think our connectivity is kind of squirrely, too. I think we've got DNS server issues, but never mind. You know, there's a world out there where the so-called talent behind the microphone doesn't even know what a DNS server is. Not me. Oh, no. I had to learn. Every time I think about one of these things that I actually know what it means now, I have to think fondly of folks like Peter Godbold and Ben Birch, who, by virtue of the fact that this by necessity network runs on a wing and a prayer, and not so many prayers really when you consider where I'm coming from, I got to learn some really cool stuff. Unfortunately, I learned enough cool stuff to be creeped out by things when they go sideways here. Question coming in the chat room. How's Agnes? I fear I'm going to have to get the Thorazine darts and the blowgun out because Agnes is doing too much. Not that I'm a doctor or anything, and I don't even play one on the radio, but she had major surgery last week, and she's off to a PTO meeting tonight. She walks very slowly right now because a lot of stuff hurts. But she's off to a PTO meeting tonight, and she knows that I'm kind of pissed about it. But I have to, Bob, honey. It's necessary. Just right in the side of the neck, and she'll finally go to bed and get some rest. You know, you can't really heal so well without rest. You got to get up and move around. I understand that. But you don't go right back to normal in a matter of days. Your body will tell on you. And I keep telling her that. Of course, she's a nurse. She just went pro and in other words, took care of only her family when we started having one. But she knows. She knows. And she knows this is driving me crazy. Oh, no, Zatoichi. No, there's no getting her liquored up. No, there's pain medicine involved, and she won't so much as smell a bottle of vanilla extract if she's got an aspirin in her. Don't ask. Just, Jesus God. So that's how Agnes is. And she doesn't make any big deal about it. People ask her, and they tell her. I haven't said anything about it just because I didn't feel like giving the gory details was necessary. Agnes had a full hysterectomy. But yesterday, or no, it was yesterday. No, it was today. See, it all begins to run together after a while. She'd had a lot of problems for a long time. This finally got done, and it was... the doctor told me that she was a train wreck inside. And so earlier today, she was downtown doing things that she ought not have been doing, but that she deems necessary. When one of the delightful ladies in town asked her why it was she wasn't willing to do this, that, or the other thing. And Agnes looked at her and said, listen, you know, I just had major surgery. Really? What? And she said, I had a complete hysterectomy. And then this. Oh, honey, that's terrible. Do you still feel like a woman? And I got to tell you, at that point in time, I was just grateful for the fact that Agnes was standing there telling me this, and not the cop who arrested her for beating the living daylights out of the idiot who asked her that question. Of course, I guess I'm equally glad that she didn't say, "Well, you know, you're right," and you know what? I just bought some devices. Why don't you just stay there for a minute? I'm going to come back and rip your ears off for a few hours. Hey, honey, don't run away. I was going to make espresso. But that's what you get around here. Do you still feel like a woman? Well, why don't you feel me and see if I do? Ignorance aplenty. Ignorance aplenty. Corey in the chat room. Beat her. Kill her. Don't think that. Like I said, I'm just glad. Mr. Kincaid, this is Officer Schmedgrass from the Homicide Division. We've got your wife down here. I'm just happy. So that's, you know, that's the little slice of life out of our world around here. 8 minutes past the hour as we get the program started this evening. And I mentioned it last night toward the end of the program. Let me just get this out of the way. It would be neat if you guys are up for it, since it's the first of the month. I would absolutely love to see what happens if, starting with a brand new fresh month and a whole 30-day period to work in, I would love to see what happens if every, because this is an experiment in keeping Bob from having to do this for a while. I'd love to see what happens if everybody in the listening audience who is able to. And bear in mind, this isn't over-the-air radio, and this isn't some televangelist program that's going out, yada, yada, yada. I'd love to see what happens if everybody in the listening audience sent $10. So that we can just get the fundraising over with for a couple of months, and I'll get back to you when it's time to do it again. Because really, we would take care of more than a couple of months if everybody did. There's a lot of listeners out there. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the under the tab contribute. As is the snail mail address, if you prefer to work that way. And if any of you are sitting there going, God, I am so sick of Bob doing this, please understand, Bob is sick of doing this. But somehow or another, we have to, no, we don't have to, we can let the lights go off. But it would be good to just get this all taken care of and out of the way. I don't know. Maybe we'll just do a... let's see how this works out. Because if that... see how much I hate doing that? But that's, you know, no, that's it's a fact. We've got a fresh month and 30 days to do it in. There's no real pressure. We get, what would that be? 250 people doing $10 instead of the usual monthly where 40 or 45 people carry the load. If we actually ran it up there and 250 people gave 10 bucks, it's all over. We're done for the month. And I can go through, you know, if it happened in 10 days, I'd have 20 days that you wouldn't have to hear me do any of this. And what a delight that would be. Not kidding. So maybe it's worth thinking about. Just a couple of other program notes. I'm going to be away from the microphone. Let's see, this is the 2nd of September. I'm going to be away from the microphone the 14th, the week of the 14th through the 17th. That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I will be going down to the Brushy Fork Institute to learn a little bit more about being a better activist. It's a wonderful experience, and the opportunity was offered to me, and I can't pass it up. So September the 14th through the 17th, I will not be behind the microphone, and I guess we're just going to be all reruns. Unless I can, at the extreme distance of thousands of miles, twist John Fox's arm into carrying a couple of those nights. We'll see how it all shakes out. And of course, I will not be around the 27th of September, and probably the 28th. I will. That's when Appalachia Rising is going to take place in Washington, D.C., but we are investigating, and I have every reason to believe that the entirety of Appalachia Rising will be available for you to hear if you can't get to D.C. and stand up with us hillbillies to see if we can't finally start getting treated like real, live, honest-to-God American citizens. Just so you'll know. Now, something a little bit more fun and pleasant. Yeah, this is definitely DNS server problems. I don't have a single screen that looks right. Ugh. You know, it's a pity I'm going to be gone down to the Brushy Fork Institute that week. Otherwise, I could take this computer out of service and wipe it and get it all right and good. But the DNS server stuff ain't me. That's them. That's up the line. I'm sorry I'm a little addled this evening. The computer has been sick all day, and I've been pulling and poking and prodding and trying to get it to behave and never really fully succeeded, so I'm a little bit addled. But that's okay. We'll get it sorted. We'll get through the program. Because we had a lot of good stuff going for us last night to continue the conversation into this evening. I mean, there were enough lines lit up. That, hey, where are you guys? I promised you. You know, there were six lines lighted at the end of the program last night. And I said, look, let's just start it again tomorrow evening. You light up all six lines, and we'll have a go at it. So the promise stands. I don't just say stuff around here. But just as a reminder, you may recall from last night the manifesto of James J. Lee, who wrote that incoherent screed about how pissed off he was at the Discovery Channel. Again, I want to compare that with the words of Jim David Atkinson. This is the note that he left before he went and shot up the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation. And it bears paying attention to, because the right wing is going to flog this and wave this thing like a bloody shirt. first of all, understand that on Jim David Atkinson's bookshelf were screeds by Sean Hannity, Michael Savage. Michael Savage's title, The Savage Wiener, in particular, being mental. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Yeah, and really, when you get right down to it, not a hell of a lot has changed with the Savage Wiener. Check this out, just so you can remember why it is that Jim David Atkinson felt like it was necessary after reading one of the Savage Wiener's books, why he felt like it was necessary to go and shoot up a Unitarian Universalist congregation. We have this recording courtesy of my head writer, David, in Tennessee, who took one for the team just to see what the Savage Wiener would be up to yesterday. There's a whole bunch of audio here. I don't know how much you can stand. I don't know how much I can stand. I've already listened to it once, and trust me, it was Excedrin headache number 6232.5789. But the Savage Wiener has, this is from his show yesterday. And it's the show yesterday, the show day the day before, and the show 2 weeks from now. It's always the same. There's nothing ever any different. Yeah, the music. If that's not the musical equivalent of Psychosis, I don't know what the hell is.
It is the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation. It is the Savage Nation, and thank God for guns and police. Thank God for gun. Okay, turn off the music already. They heard the music. Thank
Jesus God. I mean, let's see how. Yeah, we're 48 seconds into the recording, and I'm already doubting my own ability to listen to the. Thank God for guns and police. Now, before we go a lot further with this, Jim David Atkinson. Just a reminder. I guess you're wondering why I did this. Well, let me explain in detail. Over the years, I've had some good jobs, but I always got laid off. Now I'm 58 years old. And I can't get a decent job. I'm told I'm overqualified, which is a code word for too damned old, like I'm expected to age gracefully into poverty. No thanks, I'm done. I've always wondered why I was put on Earth. For years, I thought I was put here to die as cannon fodder in Vietnam, but somehow cheated the devil out of it. Lately, I've been feeling, granted, he was a private in the Army from like 73 to 74. Never quite got to Vietnam. Lately, I've been feeling helpless in our war on terrorism, but I realized I can engage the terrorist allies here in America, the best allies they've got. The Democrats, C-R-A-T-E-S. The Democrats have done everything they can to tie our hands in this war on terror. Wow, where have you heard that? Well, he specifically cited Bernard Goldberg's list of the 100 people who hate America. They're all a bunch of traitors. They want America to loose this war, that's L-O-O-S-E, for reasons I cannot understand. It makes me so mad. In a parallel train of thought, if it saddens me to think back on all the bad things that liberalism... Really? Liberalism? Liberalism. I've got my union card. Have you got yours? The union of liberalism, right. Yeah, the first church of liberalism, yeah, that one, baptized, washed in the blood. Has done to this country. The worst problem America faces today is liberalism. They have dumbed down education. They have defined deviancy down. He did not think of that by himself, defined deviancy down. Liberals have attacked every major institution that made America great, from the Boy Scouts to the military, from education to religion. The major news outlets have become the propaganda arm of the Democrat Party. Democrat Party? He didn't come up with that one by himself either. Liberals are evil. They embrace the tenets of Karl Marx. They're Marxist socialist communists. And then he goes into the Unitarian Universalist Church. Don't let the word church mislead you. This isn't a church. It's a cult. They don't even believe in God. They worship the God of secularism. That's secularism with a Z. These sick people aren't liberals. They're ultra-liberals. This is a collection of sickos, weirdos, and homos. The UU Church is the fountainhead, the veritable wellspring of anti-American organizations like MoveOn.org, Code Pink, and other un-American groups. Come on, this guy lived in rural northeast Tennessee. He ain't been nowhere near Code Pink. You got to be listening to right-wing hate to know about Code Pink, because they're one of the right-wing's bete noirs. These people are absolute hypocrites. That's hypocrites without the E. They embrace every pervert that comes down the pike. This was handwritten on notebook paper. Trust me, that ain't easy to read. But if they find out you're a conservative, that's why you are, they absolutely hate you. That with a capital H. I know. I experienced it. I can't, for the life of me, understand why these people would embrace Marxism like they do. I'd like someone to do an expose. He got the accent grave over the E right on expose, amazingly. On this church, it's a den of un-American vipers. They call themselves progressive. How is a white woman having a nigger baby progress? How is a man sticking his dick up another man's ass progress? It's an abomination. It takes a warped mind to hate America. It makes me so angry I can't live with it anymore. The environmental nuts have to be stopped. And then this. Know this, if nothing else. This was a hate crime. I hate the damn left-wing liberals. There is a vast left-wing conspiracy in this country, and these liberals are working together to attack every decent and honorable institution in the nation, trying to turn this country into a communist state. Shame on them. This was a political protest, point two. I'm protesting the liberal Supreme Court justices for give the terrorists at Gitmo constitutional rights. I'm protesting the major news outlets, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, PBS, for being the propaganda wing of the Democrat Party. It's criminal what they're getting away with. They're traitors. They must be stopped. I'm protesting the DNC running such a radical leftist candidate, Osama Hussein Obama. Yo mama, no experience, no brains, a joke, dangerous to America. Hell, he looks like Curious George. Three, this was a symbolic killing. Who I wanted to kill was every Democrat in the Senate and House, the 100 people in Bernard Goldberg's book. I'd like to kill everyone in the mainstream media, but I knew these people were inaccessible to me. I couldn't get to the generals and high-ranking officers of the Marxist movement, so I went after the foot soldiers, the chicken-shit liberals that vote in these traitorous people. Never mind the fact that if you look at that area of Tennessee, it ain't like there's anybody voting in any liberals. Yeah, that's some liberal senators they got and some liberal members of Congress and whatnot. You betcha. In other words, not to put too fine a point on it, he wasn't getting his reality from the reality that existed around him. He was getting his reality from Sean Hannity, from Michael Savage, from Bill O'Reilly, from Rush Limbaugh. And I'm sure he's got a radio in prison now. You know, they love that capital punishment in Tennessee, but somehow or another they couldn't quite bring themselves to execute a white one of their own. So he's doing life without parole for his murders. And I'll bet you he's got himself a little radio in prison, and he gets to listen to Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and all of them good patriotic Americans every day. Well, you want to bet he's a hero in prison. Someone had to get the ball rolling. I volunteered. I hope others do the same. It's the only way we can rid America of this cancer, this pestilence. This is a suicide note because he thought he was going to commit suicide by cop, but some of those chicken shit liberals he was talking about took his ass down. And now he's spending life in prison. Well, you know, mama tried, right? Mama tried. So with that behind us, let's go back and just check out a few minutes of the Savage Wiener.
Guns and police, because a disciple of Al Gore a lunatic, an eco-terrorist, held hostages at the offices of the Discovery Channel. And he was a big reader of Al Gore. He wanted to save the Earth, and the way to save the Earth was to sterilize.
Now, remember, I read you the entire manifesto last night from James J. Lee. The only book he references is that book about the telepathic gorilla. And as Bart Kopp noted today, those telepathic gorillas will get you every time. Get your brain off me, you damn dirty ape. Now, it's a wonderful book from all the reviews I read. But in one, boom, Michael Savage. He was a big reader of Al Gore. Big reader. Big head of the llama.
Wise humanity, so the animals could be saved. And he actually thought he could pull it off. But thank God for guns and police and target practice. And they shot him like a piece of Swiss cheese. And everyone is safe, so thank God for the police over there. That's all I can say. I'd like to find out who's calling me and send them what I think of them. Middle of a show, you hear? Now, who would call me when a show begins and knows what I do?
No, Savage, you dumbass. Who doesn't set his phone to vibrate before he goes on air? I guess we all know from the ringtone what Michael the Savage Wiener has for a cell phone carrier. God damn, might be a track phone, cheap bastard.
Libby, expect me to answer. There's good news out there. The Tea Party has had a major victory, and that is Senator Murkowski from Alaska, our Alaska, that means a rhino from Alaska, gave her concession speech last night to a man backed by the Tea Party Express and Sarah Palin. They call him a little-known conservative lawyer from Alaska. But you have to read the whole article from the propaganda article on Yahoo. Yahoo, as you well know, are written for the tweeters, the people who use their thumbs because they don't know how to write. They have no penmanship skills, no reading skills, no writing skills, but they can tweet. My dog has a larger vocabulary than the average tweeter. And so Yahoo caters to them, as does AOL. Anyway, the Yahoo website says Senator Murkowski's defeat marks major Tea Party win. And they called the man who beat her, Murkowski, a little-known newcomer, little-known conservative lawyer. Well, it turns out that the little-known conservative lawyer is a wonderful man who actually went to West Point. He's an Ivy League educated lawyer, went to West Point, and he's a decorated Gulf War veteran. But they saved that for about, 50 lines into the article, because as you well know, the vermin in the media hate anyone who's gone to West Point.
The vermin in the media hate anyone who's gone to West Point. Right? Well, Michael the Savage Wiener said it. It must be true. How could it not be? But this is what you get. This is what you get. This is the guy who helped put Jim David Atkinson's finger on the trigger. And he's bitching about a guy that he purports to have read Al Gore, but there's nothing in the manifesto that says he has.
Hate anybody who's actually fought in a war. Hate anybody who's actually done anything. But it's a big victory.
See, you hear that. Now, everybody in this audience knows that when I say something here, I try to put some facts behind it. But have I ever led anyone to believe that what I'm giving as opinion is actually fact when it's not? You know, we had a little bit of a conversation along these lines with Ange last night. There's a difference between opinion and fact. It just blows me away. The way these right-wing gas bags are. And it's not so much the gas bags as the gas bags listeners. Because you can tell when I'm offering opinion versus when I'm offering documented fact. That's the trick. The baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the fourteenthers and the booger eaters can't. They are... You know, atne ute aitbre, if you one what I eme. I do that in pig Latin so that they won't hear the insult and feel quite so bad. Now that Bob Kincaid's insulting us in a foreign language. Probably because you don't love Jeebus. this is where it comes from. Now, Savage's shtick is wildly different from that of the Beck or of Limbaugh. You know, Jesus, Limbaugh sounds reasonable compared to this creep. And that is, of course, strictly a relative scale.
She was a Republican, of course, but she lost to this fellow because she was a rhino type. So she's out, Tea Party's in, big victory.
Lisa Murkowski was a rhino type. Republican in name only. We've got them on our side only. We call them dinos, Democrats in name only. But the thing is, there really are dinos. The governor of my state, Joe Manchin, is a dino. Ben Nelson is a dino. Mary Landrieu is a dino. There's a lot of dinos. Lisa Murkowski was a rhino? In the real world, dinosaurs are extinct and rhinos still exist. But in the political world in the United States, it's the rhinos that are extinct and the dinos that do exist. Lisa Murkowski led a charge that was faithfully followed by the dino, the senator from my state, among others, and the dino, Mary Landrieu, and a number of others. Lisa Murkowski led a charge in the Senate to compel the Environmental Protection Agency to stop following science in its determinations regarding the global climate catastrophe. That's pretty repiglican in my book. It certainly sounds a lot like what the oil and gas companies pay to have done, doesn't it? But never mind.
It means that the Democrats really probably will be swept away. I'm revising my opinion that, look, they will attack Iran. They're desperate. And as you know, when people are desperate, they do desperate things. They wouldn't care if they dragged the world into war to hold on to power. There's so much money at stake.
Never mind the computer problems. I may not make it to 6:45. At least not sober. But don't worry, because you know what? For what you're getting from Michael Savage here on any given day from Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or any of those, or Flimball or any of the second tier types like Janet Parsall or Neil Bortz, I can upend a bottle of 80 proof and sound three times as sober as any one of the. Did you catch that? Really, honest to Jesus, did you catch that? It's the Democrats who are the warmongers. The Republican Party, as evidenced by none other than a guy who really gives me the creeps and a lot of you the creeps, Bob Gates, the defense secretary, you know, Bush's man at the Pentagon. He gave a little speech yesterday in Baghdad about the end of so-called U.S. combat operations in Iraq. And he told the crowd there that even if it turns out that the Iraq war ends good, this is the quote, it will always be clouded by how it began. He expanded on that topic. He said, and this is a quote, you know, fact, the problem with this war, for I think many Americans, is that the premise on which we justified going to war proved not to be valid. That is, Saddam having weapons of mass destruction. Now, George Bush, that end of quote. Now, George Bush, the dim leader, hired Bob Gates to succeed Donald Rumsfeld. He with his known knowns and unknown gnomes and garden gnomes and travelocity gnomes and, you know, all those gnomes that Donald Rumsfeld was running around with. Gates was hired as the next best thing, and President Not Sure kept him on. This guy's a loyal soldier, Bob Gates, and he came as close yesterday as he humanly possibly can to saying, "Listen, I'm talking to you guys, you in the military fatigues, you guys in the camo. You know why you're here. I know why you're here. George Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and that whole filthy crew that we were too busy looking forward to look back and indict lied. And we are the trillions of dollars poorer for it." And yet Michael Savage is on the air yesterday saying that, of course, we're going to get a war with Iran.
Jesus, for 8 years under George Bush, he couldn't say war with Iran with both hands in the air because one was masturbating furiously in hope of it. But this is what you get. This is what you get. Maybe we'll go back and do some more Savage Wiener in a little bit, but it's as much as I can stand right now, and I would very much like to go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John in upstate New York. How you doing?
Hey, John, good to hear from you.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a second-time caller now, and I got to tell you, I sort of felt like there had to be an intervention with all that Savage going on, so that spurred the call.
Well, God bless you, because I needed it. It was you or the gin bottle.
Well, it's a lot to take, especially without the gin bottle. But anyway, I kind of felt like I was being summoned. Today I was listening to last night's podcast. You don't know this, but for the last 2 years, you and me have been working in my lab, washing, you know, pottery and counting stone tools and stuff like that.
Oh,
so it's
be
been
still,
great to me,
oh,
although it's new.
Be still my heart.
New to you, maybe.
Be still my heart.
Right.
Oh, stone tools, yeah. Pottery sherds. Sorry.
Good stuff like that. No, that's fine. No, it really helps keep my sanity. But anyway, you guys were, you know, you were talking about the, I heard that Chaco Canyon reference and all this stuff. Lots of good anthro-archeo stuff getting thrown around last night. So I felt like I was summoned, so wanted to give a ring. So what I'm, you know, like I said, I'm calling from the broken state of New York. I don't know how much news of the woes up here filter down to you down there or the rest of the porn audience, but this state is broken. And no one seems to be able to fix it, although weirdly people are running to try to do it. You know, we got Cuomo on the Democratic side and just a couple of, you know, no good Republicans on the other side and some other random folk, but we're facing like a $9 billion budget, I think. And, you know, the solution being put up by our Governor Patterson is, you know, the thing to fix this huge tax problem is basically let's tax cigarette sales on the red.
Oh, for...
That's
no, I mean, I don't sweat tobacco taxes. I don't. I'm willing to pay my part, you know, let my addiction help me help America. Cool. I think that's
right.
Great. Same thing with my bottle, my cheap bottle of gin. Let me help America.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Right. You know, my mom, God rest her soul, used to say, I'm going to have to take up smoking again and start drinking for the first time in my life so that I can, because, you know, she was World War II, Depression era America, where we all stood together and we marched shoulder to shoulder in the war against global fascism. And everybody had, you know, and everybody had a stake in it. And she felt like that. You know, if that's the only way we're going to revenue raise for America, then she owed a duty to America to get liquored up and smoke a pack.
I like that philosophy. That's very interesting. Yeah, well, this is weird, and I feel like it's getting set up for sort of a constitutional issue, because like I said, you know, there's seven federally recognized Native American tribes in New York State, and this is Governor Patterson's solution to the deficit problem. You know, let's force them to collect taxes on cigarette sales to non-Indians, which is something that just hasn't been done, and the thinking is it runs into really big sovereignty issues, you know, that's the sort of Native side of it, and this whole plan would raise about $150 million to plug into our $9 billion shortfall. So
if you can do it to the Indians, you know, we've got a long and dishonorable history of that.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? And there's just tons of really, really ugly rhetoric around this. You know, Bloomberg has said something like, you know, Patterson needs to ride in there like a cowboy with a shotgun and get the taxes from these Indians. And it's just, you know, it's gross. So, I mean, that's an issue. Now, meanwhile, coincidentally, I just heard an interview with our Green Party candidate for governor. And it was on our sort of, you know, statewide NPR, you know, Capital Connection kind of show. And bless her heart, the woman who runs it, she's just terrible. And the whole time, you know, with the interview with this guy, all the questions were, well, you know, since you don't have any money, and since you've got no endorsements, and since you're not going to win, you know, what do you hope to get out of this? You know, just creating, you know, setting up this narrative of failure instantly. And meanwhile, this guy's throwing out ideas like, well, part of our platform is to, you know, collect the tax on every single stock trade. And if we did that last year, we would have raised $16 billion. So rather than a $9 billion shortfall, we'd be looking at a $7 billion surplus. And that's the kind of idea that is not being looked at, you know, because, well, you know, it's entrenched. And this sort of, I think, harkens back to the conversation that, well, a couple of you guys have had the last couple of days about, you know, what do? Do you vote for a Democrat who's not going to change anything, or do you try to, you know, fight the politics media machine and, you know, vote your conscience, or maybe even work for somebody who's actually going to, you know, work for you?
And you know, John Fox pointed out quite well, John, that it's the lack of choice that forces us into these conundrums. And of course, I still say that the essential thing we have yet to learn as liberals and progressives is that what goes on in November is not the election.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens in the primaries. That's where we as a political philosophy, as a political movement, are falling down on the job. Because we're not putting the candidates out there. God bless him. Down here in West Virginia, John, a 95-year-old guy had to stand up against the no-show Joe Manchin. A 95-year-old. There was nobody else in our movement who was, myself included, who was in a position to run for Senate. You know, my God, I couldn't begin to afford the filing fee.
Right.
You know, I'm not Alvin Green. But so we had to rely on a 95-year-old guy. There is some trending away from that. We are beginning to run some folks in primaries, but not nearly to the degree that we truly need to be.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I mean, I think the other side too is, you know, let's not just look at governor and senator and house. You know, let's get
city council,
local races too. Right, exactly. Mayors and aldermen, depending on where you're at. You know, all that stuff. You know.
Yeah, because
the idea of trying to.
No, I was going to say Matt Osborne, you know, made that point very clearly. He said the Republicans are sharp because those rotten bastards are looking down ballot.
Yeah.
And they understand what the pressure that they can put on the top from what they do down low. You know, granted, he may only be a ward healer, but you know what? If he's a teabagging idiot, he will scream he will scream at a level equal to 1,000 normal people speaking.
Yes, and look, and I came up in Texas, you know, and I mean, look at the state school board thing. I mean, you know, who cares about state school board? Well, they put this whole textbook thing through, you know, railroaded through. I mean, real actual change happens, you know, at very much more local levels in a whole lot of cases. And yeah, they've got that figured out. They've been working on it for 25 years.
And it works. And meanwhile,
yeah.
And what frustrates me is that on our side, we sit around, I wonder why this is happening.
Right.
When, obviously, you know, I know, but the people in the party structure, sorry, you know, too many, I don't know, maybe lobster lunches dull the brain.
Yeah, you think so. Yeah, it's got to be a sort of integrated local political and media structure that needs to be built. And, I mean, you've talked about that so often and other guests, but it's really true, and you can see it play out, and it just has to be very frustrating, you know, when you're in a situation like we are up here where there's this huge problem, and, you know, both the Democrat and the Republicans that are going for governor, you know, their solution is, well, let's, you know, cap spending and, you know, let's raise taxes, but, oh, not on Wall Street. No, we can't do that because, you know, that might actually make us some money.
Yeah, because you are, after all, talking about New York. I find it interesting, John, that you're saying that New York is a broken state. Mostly we hear about places like Colorado and
right.
California, and nobody says, well, frankly, I think you're the first person to call this program and say, oh, by the way, Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall in New York, too.
Yeah, it was very much a shock to me to come up here. I mean, I'm you know, upstate, you know, not New York City, not Finger Lakes. You know, I mean, it's busted up here. I mean, there's no job, there's no work, there's not a lot of hope. It's really a strange part of America, and it's got real issues facing it, and, you know, go along, get along ain't gonna fix anything. And that's all we're getting.
And a lot of that comes from political timidity, doesn't it? The Democrats don't have the guts to stand up to the Republicans, and the Republicans don't have any desire to stand up to their corporate ownership.
I don't know if it's guts or if it's complicity or what. I mean, I guess it depends on how conspiratorial you want to get. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I really believe in the two sides of the same coin thing. I mean, I'm personally not entirely sure that we need leaders all that much. But aside from that little issue, it's the two choices we got ain't doing it, you know.
And the sooner a lot more of us figure that out, the sooner we will fix it. Because I've lost the stomach for getting all worked up about people who won't do for people like me what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I said, I don't mind paying my tobacco tax, but I think it's a little bit much to expect the dwindling number of smokers out here to carry the country.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to impose, you know, your tax structure on what are, for all intents and purposes, you know, other nation. That's sort of part of the issue with it, with the Indian thing.
That just blows me away. Well, before you go, John, let me just ask you.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, go into too much detail, but you can't just throw, you know, I'm sitting here washing pot sherds and stone tools and not expect me to tell me more. Please, can we have like, you know, 30 seconds of archaeology porn before you go?
Archaeology porn. I spent this summer working on an excavation at an Iroquois village site, 16th, 17th century, up in the Finger Lakes. It was gorgeous. And I think you've actually read some stuff on my blog. It's mud brick. So that's
I love mud brick.
Well, I'm glad. And we're, you know, everyone who's associated with it, you know, we were all in the field this summer, you know, from Hawaii to Turkey. So we're all getting back into the U.S. and we'll have it up and be posting again real soon. So.
Oh, cool. Well, tell everybody the URL before you go.
Oh, okay. Thanks. It's mud-brick.com.
I can attest to the fact that it's a wonderful read. On days like, well, today, when I can't seem to get away from just the ugly, it's, you know, like I said the other night, last night, I want to go somewhere and live in civilization. And being able to go to something like mudbrick.com and just get away, man, is it wonderful. It is.
Well, thanks a lot. I wasn't fishing for a plug, but I do appreciate it.
Oh, no.
We don't make any money off it, so, you know.
But you've got a bunch of great colleagues, and just to watch that discussion go back and forth. Have you ever read the Golden Marshall Town?
Of course. Yeah, Flannery's parable for archaeology in the 80s, yes.
Yeah.
It really needs updating. Because a lot of stuff has changed since then, but it's still a brilliant read, and some of the archetypes he talks about are still very much with us.
I love the guy going forward on the aircraft to go through the passenger's trash.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's brilliant, and that's a little dig. Boy, this could get inside baseball. That's a little bit of a dig at Michael Schiffer from Arizona, who was sort of involved in that sort of thing, but
right.
Yeah, it's brilliant, and I mean, the more you know about sort of the field and some of the personalities, the more hilarious it is.
See, I studied under a couple of guys that would not have peed on Brian Fagan had he been on fire.
Oh yeah, that's a pretty common sentiment. Fagan is a very prolific textbook author. For those who don't know, if you ever take an intro to archaeology class, you read his books, and he kicks out about three a year, it seems like.
Is he, and he's apparently still doing it. No relief in sight.
Oh yeah, no, he's good. Apparently quite a nice guy, but yeah, not a great rep in the field, I guess.
Well, you know, there's several who have earned that moniker. I was doing my little bit of study back when everybody thought that an archaeologist was Indiana Jones, and it was driving the people who taught me half out of their minds. Because they,
oh yeah, well it's right.
Yeah, they had preppy boys in plaid shirts and beautiful young co-eds in Angora sweaters signing up for archaeology 101 because they wanted to see the guy with the glasses and the bow tie who stole the idol from the South American cave.
Right, exactly. Although that's an image that if you can sort of make it your own, it will still get you places. You know, we could leave it at that.
I think I know what you're talking about. Wow, what a great way to start the conversation this evening, John. Enjoy your scrubbing.
Oh, thanks. I sure will, and I'll catch you guys again soon. All right, thanks.
All right, take care, and don't be a stranger.
You got it. Cheers, love.
Bye now. Isn't that cool? I wash pot sherds with John. I mow grass with Dennis in Kentucky. I love the idea of all the things that I get to do with folks via the podcast. It's just a beautiful image. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Not much. Couple of things. One, Landover, not Silver Spring. That's where Wallace was shot.
I got straightened up on that by another person from the area. Tosh dropped me a note today saying that it was Laurel, not Silver Spring.
I think it's Landover, but it could be Laurel. It's essentially right near where FedEx Field is now.
Nice.
And I used to live right around the corner, as a matter of fact, from Discovery, which is on Colesville in Georgia.
Well, you know what the Savage Wiener said. Thank God for police and target practice.
Screw him. You know, it's interesting. Look at the right-wing Looney Tunes and look at the left-wing Looney Tunes. The only one who died here was the left-wing Looney Tune. The right-wingers, they go out and start murdering people. Other people, not themselves.
Right, because the left-wing, alleged left-wing Looney Tune, but I think the language in there about immigration says that he wasn't one.
Right, right.
But let's say that he was. Yeah, we take a gun out and put it to our own heads and say, you know, one move and the gets it. You remember Blazing Saddles?
Yep.
Yeah. He ain't kidding. He'll do it. And the other ones, you know, and the other ones, and the right wingers go out and spray down the room with an assault rifle that they bought at a gun show that was put into the stream of commerce, you know, by the cops.
Right, right. And the Montgomery County cops are pretty professional, actually, but it doesn't surprise me that this guy got wasted. What the hell did they expect? You know.
I think when you do that, you know you're committing suicide by cop.
Basically. Unless you're lucky and some parishioners manage to nail you to the floor before the cops get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Cossack. I mean, give me odds. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that guy's a hero in prison right now?
Oh, gotcha. The thing is, the people you find in prison are more racist than people outside. I mean, they're crazed. They are just absolutely out of their minds, many of them. It's bad. I mean, if you released all of the people who are in prison for victimless crimes, which would be about 70% of them.
Yeah, your average got busted for the third time with the third joint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there was some meth residue in that bag, boy. What bag?
You do that way too well, Casa. Boy!
I've heard it before.
I do believe it. And, you know, knowing where you live, well, right.
Yeah.
What you doing around here, boy? That's W-H-U-C-H-U. What you?
Uh-huh. No, this place is redolent of Foxworthy's characterizations. I mean, yeah. This is a weird place. Very, very strange. I mean, you know, you go riding around, you see these idiots with their McCain-Palin stickers on these old junkers, and you're going, what in God's name are you doing voting for those people? Are you mad? You know, you're the reason that these people are in power as much as they are, and they're the people who lost you your damn job, you idiot.
Oh, did you? Did you see the story today about the debate last night between Barbara Boxer and Carly Fiorina?
No, missed it.
They had what will probably be their one and only debate, and it was ugly with a capital UG. Barbara Boxer apparently dropped a rock on her. Where's the poll quote? Described her as. Oh, it'll be here in a minute. Says Carly Fiorina fights for billionaires and corporations that outsource jobs.
There you go. And well, you heard about the most recent HP fiasco, right?
Yeah, just paid how many millions in fines?
Oh, not that, but the fact that they released their CEO after that sexual harassment thing. And he walked away with a $28 million golden parachute.
Man, that ain't walking, that's floating.
Bob, what would happen to you if you were released for that kind of sexual harassment? I mean, before Agnes got to you. You know?
Well, that's an important caveat now, isn't it, Cossack?
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, if you pulled off that kind of thing, you wouldn't be walking away with any money in your pockets. Matter of fact, they would strip you of your retirement.
I would be – no. They would strip me.
Yeah.
Not of my retirement. They would strip me. And then things that I don't care to describe on the radio would happen. But never mind. No. Not no money in my pockets. No pockets.
Exactly.
But it's another one of those cases of IOKIYAR, Cossack. You know, it's okay if you're a Republican. And I've got another one sitting right here in front of me. There is a new teabagging website out.
Oh, God.
And they're trying to create a, you know, it's funny. I guess if you're a Republican, you can't make grassroots without AstroTurf. But they've got themselves a new AstroTurfing group. And I'm not going to bother giving the name of it, but one of the first things they did is they posted a video, and along the way, there's this attack blonde on the video, and during the podcast video about the race between Mike Castle, who's a Republican, and his the teabagging primary opponent, I guess they haven't had their primary yet. A voice off the screen says, "Isn't Mike Castle cheating on his wife with a man?" And the attack blonde on the camera says, "That's the rumor." Now wait, because we haven't gotten to the punchline, Cossack. The guy who was responsible for that is a creep by the name of Michael Yates Walker. Michael Yates Walker, at Xavier University in Cincinnati in 2006, he was indicted on rape charges and held on a $250,000 bond, and just sort of quietly left school. You know, according to the Xavier Newswire, Michael Yates Walker was released on $250,000 bond after being indicted on 3 counts of sexual misconduct and 2 charges of rape. Walker, a 27-year-old resident of Norwood, is formally accused of the October 12, 2006 rape of 2 Xavier University freshman girls. According to the assistant Hamilton County prosecutor Seth Teeger, Walker invited the 2 women to his off-campus apartment where he proceeded to serve alcohol to the minors until they lost consciousness. One of the women reported waking up naked the next morning, unable to recall the previous night. The second woman suspected nothing and accompanied Walker on a date the following evening where he attacked her again. Now, he walked on these charges. He walked. Think Progress contacted him, and he said, "I was falsely accused. Most of the charges were thrown out of court, and I was found not guilty on the rest."
Oh, really?
And then when they asked him, "Well, okay, what about making this accusation against Mike Castle in Delaware?" He said, "Well, other right-wing blogs have pushed the rumor, too." IOKIYAR.
Well, and you heard about Simpson's newest class of villains.
Yeah, veterans.
Yeah.
Now he's gotten himself in the soup. Because, granted, Barack Obama can ignore the regular Joes and Janes out there who said, you know, really, calling Social Security recipients sucks on a 310 million tit cow? That's a little over the top, Mr. President. And, you know, Obama can say, I think we need to be bipartisan in this. But by God, the veterans are after him now because Simpson has said that veterans are part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's not good enough that they left an arm or a leg or a lung out on the field. You know, now they're just nothing but a bunch of deadbeats trying to get our money. Oh, come on, you know.
Well, you see, they're getting Agent Orange veterans benefits, and there's no proof that their illnesses are connected to Agent Orange.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not helping in this fight. Screw you, Alan.
I mean, does this man even have any conception of what happened in Vietnam? I have friends who went there who are dying of Agent Orange, for God's sakes.
See, that's the thing.
They were testing this stuff.
You know, he don't care. And I hate to be flip, and I'm not trying to be flip, but he doesn't care.
I mean, this is past infuriate. I mean, this is just mentally deficient to say things like that, even if he believes them. I mean, God.
I know.
Being a burned-out old hippie doesn't help, I'm telling you. It really doesn't. I mean, having gone through all that, having gone through the demos, having talked to the guys who came back broken in most cases, and most of the veterans, surprise, surprise, were joining us, the anti-war demonstrators. They weren't sitting here and saying, no, send me back. I want to go back. They were saying, my God, what have they done to us? What have they done to our generation? And I ask the same question. How many lost generations do we have to have? Is every generation from now on to be lost?
But you know, I know, but the thing is, Cossack, you remember in White Stock the other day how the rodeo clown got all teary-eyed and, you know, probably had a little Vicks vapor rub down there on the bags under his eyes. And somewhere in this crowd today is an 8-year-old boy, and he's going to be the next George Washington. Right? Remember that? Well, the fact of the matter, that's not the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is somewhere in that crowd was the guy who was going to be the next Alan Simpson. And 60 years from now, he'll probably be out there with a microphone in front of his face, and he'll be explaining to Merca how it is that those veterans from the Iraq that are collecting benefits for depleted uranium exposure, they're a suck on the system. And you know what? Yes, in answer to your question, every generation going forward that enters into one of these stupid wars is going to have a class of veterans who are harmed by it. Because, you know, I just believe that kind of karmically speaking, when you start bad wars by your own choice and your own hubris, bad stuff rebounds upon you.
Yeah.
And every time we do one of these, we're going to have a class of devastated veterans come back that are going to need further help from the people who sent them there, who will then resent the help, resent having to give the help. And there will be an Alan Simpson. You know, it's another one of those little manifestations of that Bible verse I was talking about the other night. You know, the poor ye have with you. Well, guess what? The Alan Simpsons ye have always with you, too. There's an asshole in every generation that will be a magnet for other assholes. Is that fair?
That sounds about right, unfortunately, but no, it's not fair. It sounds correct, though. mean, what is going to happen to your sons and your daughters?
Don't take me there. That's the kind of stuff that brings me up bolt upright at 3 o'clock in the morning with beads of sweat rolling down my head.
Yeah, the poverty draft is in action, and by God, I think that's part of the, plan. Impoverish as much of America as you can, so you will have a never-ending supply of bodies to feed into these never-ending conflicts. Because as soon as we're done with Afghanistan, we're going to go after Yemen, or we're going to go after Iran, or we're going to go after fill in the blank. We'll find somebody. We're going to pick a fight with somebody. Have to. We must have an enemy. We cannot get along without an enemy. And as the guy was saying about New York being broken, well, Florida is broken too. We're going to end up having as governor this foul thing called Scott. He's going to buy a bloody election. With money he stole from us.
God, I hope you're wrong, but I fear you're not, Cossack.
I mean, I love the woman who's running against him. Alex Sink. She's a good person. She's a good Democrat.
Well, she's doomed then.
And she's the treasurer right now of Florida. She's got her head on straight. She's a very good person. And I'm praying to God that enough people in this idiotic state are going to pull their heads out of their butts for long enough to realize that if we put that idiot Scott in, we're doomed. We're doomed. And what is the problem, Bob? What is the problem with levying taxes on those who have made off like bandits for the last 30 years? That upper 2% of the population that's skimming off 80%, 80% of the wealth of this country is going to 2% of the population. And everybody else gets to pick over the crumbs.
I know.
What kind of sense does this make?
None. None. But that's a flippant answer, Cossack, and I apologize. What sense it makes is that, and you know that I think you knew this before. I think the question was semi rhetorical. It only makes sense when you take into account the fact that the Repiglicans have been extremely successful in pushing their message at the people of the United States, while the Democrats sat idly by, sucking their thumbs, and well, we talked about this the other night. We don't want to do that radio. We're better than that. We'll have wine and cheese parties where we'll explain the issues. Hey, John Kerry, come over here. You can explain the issue real good. Yes, I can.
Themselves to themselves, for God's sakes.
No, they can. It just takes 10 or 12 years per question. Hey, Cossack, we got them stacked up, buddy. This has been a great conversation, a great way to get it started.
All righty. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida, and onward we go. Nope. Okay. Not as stacked up as I thought. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
So I just thought I would contribute to the sort of brain-dead political squabbles that are going on in this country.
Emphasis on brain-dead.
Well, it's just incredible. It's just like, oh, my God. But anyway, so the White House came out defending Obama as a mainstream Christian after Glenn Beck's accusation. Can I, call out David from Maine?
Oh, do please.
Because, you know, it's just sort of, how long are they going to keep responding to this man? And I guess the latest is that what? The liberation. I mean, he doesn't even know what he's talking about when he's talking about liberation theology. And the fact that this man single-handedly is able to turn that doctrine into something evil is really awe-inspiring, I have to say.
Oh, it is.
Because it's like, are you kidding me? What the hell is wrong with religion working towards general uplift?
Making people's lives better. You know,
how is it, in the way the mainstream media is sort of, turning it into another acorn tire. You know what I mean?
Hey, Sandra, watch this. Or not, listen to this. If we were doing video, it would be watch. Listen, check this out. If the Democrats had any guts, and like Bart Kopp says every time he says something like that, you know, why am I even going to bother to continue this? But if the Democrats had any guts, you know how you respond to that liberation theology business?
Yeah.
By telling the story of Bishop Oscar Romero.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And this man was a liberation theologian, and he was gunned down like a dog in the streets by a right-wing death squad supported by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Everybody who thinks that's a good idea, raise your hand.
No, I mean, that's what I mean. It's sort of the history of liberation theology. I'm sorry. I can't believe the way it's being...
Well, the funny thing about liberation theology is that it against all odds in many ways, first of all, it was an outgrowth of Vatican II promulgated by John the 23rd. Secondly, it arose in the Catholic Church, which is just amazing because of how hidebound the Church is in the first place. Thirdly, it actually, liberation theology, as espoused by Roman Catholic theologians, who, by the way, were purged by John Paul II, liberation theology is actually predicated on Scripture, as opposed to Jesus, don't any of you people put a little latex thingy on your winkies. Which isn't.
Well, and also the sort of, morphing it all into with the sort of, black struggle in relation to the church is even more upsetting. It's like, you know, he needs to shut the fuck up, and I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. This is appropriate.
No, it's unbelievable. It's like, he's such an ignorant bastard. He don't have no clue what role the church played in the life of black Americans, and I'm just sort of, he makes me feel sick, trying to denigrate any sort of social justice. What did he think the black church was for? I'm sorry. What the hell? How does he think the black church originated, and why? I mean, it's just, it's mind-numbing, and it's so scary that people are completely devoid of any sense of history or where shit comes from, you know? But this is what manifestations you get because of this national ignorance. But you get the President of the United States coming out, distancing himself from what? Does he even know?
Wow.
I don't mean to go off.
I'm flummoxed by that question again, as much rhetorical as it is substantive. Do they know?
Yeah.
You know, they were going to come in and do things different. It wasn't going to be Washington business as usual, which is, both sides always preach that.
Well, after the Sherrod episode, I'm sort of thinking, dude spent too much time in Hawaii or wherever the fuck he was in, because the missteps around anything to do with blacks that descended from slaves, sorry to go there, he don't seem to have a clue.
And isn't that something that was raised during the campaign by some, the authenticness issue?
Well, yeah, but, people are going to wash that away because, that's pretty obnoxious in itself. But it pops up when stuff like this goes on, because why is Gibbs going to come out and even dignify it?
There. Right there. Why dignify it?
Well, then I remember he goes on The View, so there's not much sunlight No, hey, I'm just trying to, you know.
No, I know.
Head and tail.
But, you know, what you said about liberation theology, Sandra, that was just one of the whoppers that flows out of the rodeo clown's mouth. He did one. I don't know if people were paying attention, how closely people were paying attention, but thank God some folks were. Stephanie Mensimer over at Mother Jones was paying attention, and she caught this little quote, and I love it. I love it, Sandra, when I see and am able to sort of experience real journalism actually happening.
Yeah, which is always, yeah.
Well, it's rare enough that it sort of glares at you when it does.
Right.
She's got this paragraph in a thing from yesterday titled Glenn Beck's George Washington Whopper. And she says, Beck also invoked Washington, meaning George, while describing the inspiring experience of visiting famous tourist destinations around the nation's capital. I've been going to Mount Vernon, he explained. Holding out his hands for emphasis, he declared with emotion, I went to the National Archives, and I held the first inaugural address written in his own hand by George Washington. Really? They'll let you do that? If you're Glenn Beck, they'll let you hold those precious documents relating to the very soul, the very essence of this nation?
That's just a lie.
That,
no way.
Bingo, that's just a lie.
No, that is a lie. I'm sorry. Yeah. There's no way that those sort of documents are being handled in any sort of extra way like that. I don't know. Don't even make no sense.
Stephanie Mensimer did some journalism. And she verified that, yeah, he got a VIP tour of the archives arranged by what she describes as an as-yet unidentified member of Congress, and that he got to take a peek inside the legislative vault, which isn't open to ordinary visitors. And then she writes, but archive spokeswoman Susan Cooper insists that Beck didn't lay a finger on the precious documents, much less George Washington's inaugural address. Those kinds of treasures are only handled by specially trained archival staff.
Yeah, no, I mean, because, yeah. There's no way that beyond gazing upon it, that's about it. And you're lucky to do that.
But you know what? And I mean no disrespect. This isn't Mother Jones. How many people that could have proven to them firsthand that Glenn Beck is a liar, the people who need to know that he's a liar, are going to read this article at Mother Jones?
Oh, yeah, no, I know. And also, but the thing is, I made the mistake of, like, catching a small snippet of it. And was it as pedestrian as it came across? I'm like, Jesus.
Oh, it was deadly dull.
I mean, it was so lame. He was so lame talking about, oh, there might be a Washington here. And it's just, all of it was just.
It was romper room. And I see George Washington, and I see Thomas Jefferson, and there's Ben Franklin.
So bizarre. And like I say, real pedestrian. And I really don't understand what I guess that comes with having Radio Rwanda. It's a national network. So I guess if they constantly talk about. No, but this is also being talked about everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, some. But, of course, you know, you've got to turn on the Daily Show to really get this stuff deconstructed. And you know what? The 70-year-old demographic over at Radio Rwanda ain't up that late.
Well,
no offense to the 70-year-old demographic.
Well, no, I mean it's just absurd. His whole act, the whole thing is just so hideous. But I must ask about. I'm still stuck on the lovely speech from President Not Yet, or what do you call him?
Not sure.
Not sure. And the idea that he has, not only is he looking forward, not back.
Oh.
He is laying the groundwork for these people to pop up now to claim victory for Iraq. Have you noticed this?
They already have.
Well, no, but it's just, and it doesn't help what he did, though. It's like, what's going on? They're not being prosecuted, now they're not even being criticized, and they're being praised by the sitting president who, before said it was a dumb war.
And it takes Bob Gates, of all people, to address the troops and say, by the way, you're over here on a lie. I mean, that just shocked me.
Yeah, but see, it's shocking, but nothing changes, though. That's the situation we're in.
Well, there is that, because nothing is changing. I mean, again, 50,000 troops are going to stay there. We've still got people in tons of bases.
That's not an end to the, I don't know what, it's something from Orwell again.
No, an end to the occupation is when we pack up and go home.
Well, no, when we're completely gone. I mean, it's
there shouldn't
be any sort of nuance in this situation. That's the thing. They're nuancing ending of a war. Hello?
Yeah, it doesn't work very well for me either.
Hey, listen, did you hear about, I mean, it's interesting to look at how this, Citizens United versus, what is the name of that case?
Oh, Citizens United?
Yeah, okay, Citizens United, let's call that. It's amazing what is transpiring. Now you have Big Oil or the petroleum, the sort of front group for them, doing these rallies around the country to block any pending oil regulations.
Oh, I know.
These corporations are like just distorting public opinion, and no one asks how these things pop up now, but every time you dig a little deep, it's some horrible, pernicious corporation.
Always.
And it's just becoming, I know we just use this word, you know, I mean, I'm done with it, but, you know, the new norm, man, that is like, and the norms are becoming really horrific, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and they're not nearly as fun as the norm at the end of the bar in Cheers.
No, it's, oh, no, it's just hideous. I don't know.
Look, we've got a, you know, you mentioned oil. I mean, you know, we've got a new exploding oil well in the Gulf.
I know, I saw that, and thankfully so far no workers have died, right?
No, there were 12 people there, 11 were recovered, one is injured. But the problem is, once again, it's an oil and gas platform in 2,500 feet of water, and the first stories out said, luckily, it was not producing any oil or gas at the time.
No, but there's a...
That's been updated.
There's some huge slick, ain't it?
Yep. About 1 million gallons so far.
A million gallons?
Or was it million? I don't know. Maybe I've got it wrong, but...
I saw...
But no, there's an ugly... Yeah, there's a bunch of...
Back to the sort of hideous politics. Have you seen this Joe Miller's face? He ain't got a chin, Bob.
Well, you know, chinless is apparently not an obstacle to membership in the Senate. We know that, right?
It's so nasty. I don't care if you put a beard on it. I don't care what you cover it with. Chinless wonders. And this guy is like, get rid of Social Security. One of them ones.
Oh, yeah. And the only hope is that the other guy will beat him. But you know what? It's Alaska. And, you know, you talk about new norms, Sandra. Well, that Miller creep is the new norm in Alaska.
Well, no, I can't believe that he beat, I mean, because the woman he beat was some sort of freak who, what sort of...
Well, that's the whole point. You know, the Savage Wiener was celebrating it on air that, you know, Lisa Murkowski, she was a rhino.
No, that's just a lie. She wasn't. Didn't she single-handedly stop any change in the laws for the oil companies and how much they pay?
Yes.
Right.
And tried to stop the EPA from using science in its determinations about carbon dioxide.
And you're telling me that we have to, and this Miller is even worse, right?
Lisa Murkowski's going to look like Adlai Stevenson if that guy gets in.
Listen, I don't know. I don't really know. You know, actually, you know, I guess I'll just, I don't really, I'm just sort of, I guess I was just more disturbed by the weakness of Obama. That's what got me to call, because I was just thinking.
Well, you know, no, I agree. You know, first they came out and said, we want to reaffirm that Barack Obama is a Christian. And now this?
Yes, and it's just because it's not only he has to clarify that he's a, now he's a mainstream Christian, trying to imply that liberation theology that may be tied to black folks is somehow too radical.
Yeah, he quit liberation theology when he quit speaking to William Ayers.
Well, and it's just sort of, it's like, oh, the whole, I mean, I'm so sick of it. It's like, I don't really know what's going on except for the job numbers that are coming out tomorrow. They're expecting the unemployment rate to move up, if you can believe that.
And you know what? I think it's going to continue to move up.
Well, I'm like, what is it going to move up to anyway? I just am sort of like, yikes. And now they're talking about some sort of new stimulus, which, of course, is just tax cuts for businesses.
Wait for it, because if you're not prepared for it, it's going to really, really hurt. It's like not bracing yourself before the needle goes in your arm at the doctor's office. Anybody want to take odds on the new stimulus involving not repealing or not letting the Bush tax cuts on the rich expire?
Well, yeah. I mean, I saw that because, see, I was trying to figure out the whole legislative process of that. Now, I thought that Congress actually has to do something to stop it from expiring.
They do.
They don't?
They do.
They do.
They have to do something.
Okay. So, because doing something is always more difficult than not when you have Congress involved. So,
generally speaking, that's true, Sandra, but when they've got something that they can all agree on, you know, like a flag burning bill or a horse meat ban, they can move with real alacrity.
Okay, and so once again we're back to him vetoing it. Is that what we're going to be hoping for?
I'm hoping? No, scared that he won't.
Well, who's going to be able to pass it though? In the House?
I think you've got enough right-leaning members of the Democratic caucus in the House to probably team up with every last repiglick in there and pass it, and then it goes over to the Senate, and nobody, even, you know, what are you down to in the Senate then? Bernie Sanders and Al Franken filibuster it? Harry Reid will, by God, get tough on their ass.
No, but, okay, so this is a real example of just straight-up class warfare, then. The rich people will not pay taxes.
No, they refuse.
And they're going to use all their power to not do it. I mean, that's what this, if this comes down like that, I can't look at it as anything but a government for the rich and by the rich. That's it. It's done. You see what I'm saying? And if they can maintain this low of taxes in this climate, anything can and will happen. I'm totally disturbed because I thought that, you know, it would just sort of expire. A few yelps, but it would just expire, you know?
You know, but I don't trust them for that at all now.
I understand. Did you hear about Rahm Emanuel saying fuck the UAW?
No. Why am I not surprised?
Oh yeah, that's the latest. The guy who did the car business, the czar, that guy.
Yeah.
Ratner or whatever his name is. He resigned suddenly. I guess he has some pending pay to play scandal bubbling up in his business, right? So he left. But he wrote a book, and he breaks down some really nasty stuff, and that was one of it, that Rahm Emanuel is really anti-union.
Oh, dear.
And so all that we've always said about him is just as it appears.
Why am I not surprised? No, the only union that Rahm Emanuel likes is the SEIU. And he only likes them because Andy Stern preached that constant, the new labor gospel. You know, that we're not going back to FDR. Remember Andy Stern?
That's more in line with the Mussolini model to me.
Right, right.
Yes, unions like that.
Andy Stern envisions a union corporate partnership.
Right, and that's you know, that is something out of the pages of Professor Mussolini, most definitely.
Professor.
And so I looked at him and I thought, oh, yikes on that. You know, he wants to invest 15% of the Social Security on Wall Street, too, Mr. Stern does.
I just assume he didn't, really. Hey, before you go, I got it. It would not be any fun at all if we didn't get shallow for a minute, or semi-shallow.
Please.
First of all, it's the most wonderful time of the year. We kick off major college football tonight.
Right. No, I know you are in heaven.
And Utah's playing Pitt, and Marshall's playing Ohio State. I don't know if you can score negative numbers in a football game, but I think Marshall's got a real chance.
Shut up. What's your team ranked?
I don't know what our rank. I haven't seen the latest, but we're in the top 25.
Yeah, no, but, that's what, yeah.
But here's the fun part. You know those geniuses out in Oregon at Nike?
Yeah.
You know how they've got their Pro Combat Armor series of uniforms?
Oh, no.
You know, they tried it out on those poor on the poor unsuspecting players at Oregon first, and had them running around with yellow shoes and little duck wings on their shoulders, and and that sort of gray sort of grid pattern stuff. And they put angel wings on Tim Tebow's jersey for his last game, and just crazy design shit. Well, they finally gotten around to screwing up West Virginia.
What did they do?
We're only going to wear them in one uniform, but they gave us black and white uniforms, and the white of the uniform is sort of coal spattered.
Oh, listen, you must be spitting. Come on.
No, this is a real Ginsu commercial, though, Sandra, because there's more. So they introduced it on their website. You can go and see it, or better yet, you can go and see Jeff Biggers' post about it at Huffington Post. They have this guy wearing the number 9, Major Harris's old number, with his, hand stuck up to the sky, and all around him, he's standing in the midst of a giant strip mine. How I wish I was lying to you.
Well, no, but it just is so, it's just beyond stupid. So you keep destroying the area and celebrating it. I mean, is there some sort of celebration?
Right, and they say that they're doing it to honor the 29, and they put the number 29 on our new black helmet. You know, our colors are old gold and blue, but we get a black helmet for this. And they put in white numbers the number 29 on the helmet. You know, to memorialize the 29 fallen miners from the Upper Big Branch disaster.
Right, but they're not separating it from the coal glorification, though.
Oh, no, they're not at all. And the fact of the matter is, it's a great big slap in the face, because those guys were underground miners, and they've got this cat standing in the middle of an open pit strip mine from Wyoming or Australia or somewhere.
Oh, I know. That's pretty despicable.
It's absolutely sickening, but it also has a happy ending. This thing created so much of a stink in the space of 24 hours that Nike have agreed to change the ad.
Oh, okay. I'm glad to hear that, because I was just sitting here thinking, wow, just sort of beyond the beyond. Wow, okay, well.
But the other thing that slayed me was this line in their ad copy that said, "Coal in West Virginia. It's just how it is."
You are lying.
No, ma'am.
What? I mean, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm in a state of shock. What?
The company said in a prepared statement, "The new WVU football uniform was designed to celebrate the football team and honor the heritage of coal mining in the state. We're modifying the graphic of the player on our website to address concerns."
That's just how it is.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And no on that. That's terrible.
But, never. It gets worse. Or not worse, but, West Virginia's not the only one being victimized. Then there's the University of Alabama. On their white away game unis.
Yeah.
the numbers are done in houndstooth. You know, like the Bear Bryant hat?
Yeah?
The numbers are in that houndstooth check.
Oh, no! That's hideous. Why?
Okay, it's on the red. No, it's the home jerseys.
Why?
Yeah, cream and white houndstooth on the crimson jersey. And you know what? We got a little pissed about that, about what Nike did to our unis up here. They will riot in Alabama.
Yeah, listen, I guess you know more about it than me. Really? Is it, will people, all because they dare to alter? Is that what it's about?
Well, I mean, once again, it's homage. Just like our black and white coal-spattered uniforms are homage to the hard-working coal miners. It's an homage to Bear Bryant and the glorious past of Alabama by putting houndstooth numbers on.
Oh, God. Well, you know, wow. Well, so is the...
What are they going to do to Penn State?
Oh, I know, but they can't. Ain't they pretty radical about keeping it real basic there?
They'll have... No, but Phil Knight will put out a hit on Joe Paterno.
Well,
just to get that uni money.
Well, no, I'm just saying, though, but I thought that the whole idea with old Uncle Joe, he runs a real, you know, it's hard.
Yeah, Joe wouldn't even allow the swoosh on for a few years.
That's what I'm saying. So, well, I guess they're just waiting for him to pass. I mean, how old is dude?
Way up in his 80s.
I mean, the thing is, it's amazing that he's still coaching, I have to say.
But, you know, he ain't doing a bad job. He's not like Bobby Bowden, who was just sort of dribbling on the sidelines.
Well, yeah, they finally had to usher him on out. That was not very nice, the way that all went.
No, it was dirty, and he attended some event where he said he was pushed out.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, he was, but he was pushed out because if you followed the pregame, well, you know, that boy run a pretty good route down there. Look, a duck. You know, it just wasn't, he wasn't there.
Well, no, but I don't understand how this Jopie is still hanging on, because it has to be hella stressful.
Because the alumni would string up until Joe Paterno has a three or four seasons of 3-9, 4-8, they're going to be okay with him, because it's one of the last schools that's willing to do right by one of the great old men of the game.
No. I think that it's good. It's just surprising. But only one thing about that you're talking about college football. Listen, why was Boise ranked so high?
Because the guy, it's almost unavoidable, isn't it? The guy keeps whipping everybody's ass.
No, but it's not like their schedule is all that wonderful, though, Bob. Come on now.
Well, I know, but how many games will Florida play against the St. Eustace's School for the Deaf and Blind and One-Legged?
Okay, yeah, I know, but the Boise thing just seems to be, like, hella hype. And, I mean, if they run the table, then I guess we can come back to that conversation. But the other thing is,
I think they're sick of Boise, so they're giving them a high ranking, hoping that that'll put the target on their back and they'll get blown away, and you know, that'll be the end of it, and they can ignore them some more.
Yeah, because it's just, well, I'm sort of like, oh, my God, enough already. Let's get to the real good show of this fool at USC not knowing how the hell to handle 2 years of nothingness. Every day, some new USC person transferred elsewhere. I mean, it's...
Well, and I hear from talking to David in Tennessee that the dime may very well be getting ready to get dropped in Knoxville, too. Knoxville.
Oh, what, another program?
No, getting dropped on Kiffin.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because he, like, left some family member in Knoxville who didn't take kindly to it at all.
Well... Yeah, you have to say, though, that they, well, the way they went off the deep end with Kiffin, though, it was a bit over the top down there in Tennessee.
Yeah, a little bit. But, it's going to be a damned interesting season. Tonight's game, Utah versus Pitt, may turn out to be a damn good one.
Well, see, you know, they've been advertising some, like, fantastic packages for Stanford football this year.
Oh man, how do you walk away from that?
Well, it's so tempting, because I mean, no, some really good prices, and you know, Stanford kind of like I don't know if they have the.
Well, you've got the hottest quarterback in the country out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Gerhardt is gone, but.
Yeah, but this young man, isn't, what's his name, Adam Luck?
Yeah, they still have the coach, you know what I mean? And, you know, they got some interesting games.
And, well, I've got an interest in watching the young Luck fella play, because he is the son of one of West Virginia's better quarterbacks leading up to Jeff Hostetler. Oliver Luck was a good quarterback at WVU, and he went and played for the Houston Oilers for a while, raised a family, sent his son went out to Stanford to play quarterback, and now Oliver Luck is the new athletic director at WVU, which kind of makes me wonder, you know, did anybody pass this Nike bullshit past Ollie?
Oh, no. I just think about Nike. They're so suspect. That's
well, you know, but I guess in a way some people might think it's kind of trivial, Sandra, but the fact of the matter is, you know, all of that crap is made in some sweatshop in Vietnam by a 9-year-old girl huffing glue.
Yeah, no, it's evil. That's what I'm saying. It's, like, so disgusting. Oh, but they apparently, as rumors have it, they're going to cut that rapist suspension in half now. Who's the quarterback for, is it Pitt, the Steelers?
Oh, yeah, what?
Roethlisberger?
Yeah, Roethlisberger, right.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like, oh, okay. You know, so all of a sudden he's going from 6 to 3 games or something like that.
Yeah, it's just kind of going away.
Yeah, it's just going to go away. But anyway, whatever, it'll be good to, you know, to watch the football again this season, I guess.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna run in, and I'm gonna watch. Hopefully, you know, Ohio State will be, you know, like 142 to -7. Trust me, Marshall can do that.
Oh well, listen, Ohio State, they gotta pretty much. I don't say they have to run the table, but don't they gotta start winning?
Yeah, well, I think their faithful would rather like that, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they have that quarterback who's interesting, but I don't know what to say about the rest of the team. I haven't paid too much attention.
Well, I mean, they've got the usual, I mean, they got studs. It's a question of, you know, can they play outside their conference?
Mm.
And, God knows if, Tressel hands Rich Rodriguez his ass again. I'm told Rich already has his bags packed.
Oh yeah, no. Listen, that is gonna be funny. They need to win that game. Not as much as Michigan does, but yeah, he ain't gonna last the season if he can't win this year, right?
No, I mean, I'm told by people who know him that he's telling people, you know, I'm done.
Really?
Yeah. Short of winning the national championship, he's toast.
Oh, well, I guess he's toast, because they ain't going to win no national championship.
No, I don't think so.
Well, anyway, yeah, I guess that's about it.
All right.
Hello.
Well, Sandra, have a great evening. This has been a fun one.
Okay, talk to you soon.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye now. I can't tell you how infuriating that Nike ad was. It was absolutely disgusting. Jesus. You know, and as Jeff Biggers noted, 104,000 minors have died from black lung disease. Three a day die still from black lung. And we get this from Nike? Jesus, couldn't we get something that celebrated the natural beauty, the stern character of the mountaineer, for God's sakes? We're not the West Virginia coal miners, we're the West Virginia mountaineers. There were mountaineers in this state before there were ever coal miners. And, you know, long before for those of you learning your Mountaineer trivia, the original team name of West Virginia University, we were the West Virginia University Snakes. I kind of like that, don't you? Yeah, I thought so. Let's keep it moving. Hey, welcome to the program.
Does any of this surprise you?
Doesn't surprise me. Makes me crazy. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Getting there.
Well, after what I heard about the effects of Agent Orange being marginalized, you know, Bob, most people now would probably think that Agent Orange is some kind of softball, a soft drink that was served to troops overseas.
Probably so. And more's the pity.
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely.
But there's enough people who know what it is that I would that appearances indicate that they're going to be pretty vociferous with the Obama administration about getting rid of Alan Simpson. You know, he's a simple appointee. Obama can point at him and say, "You're done," and he goes. And I don't see why that should be a difficult decision.
I don't either.
You know, really, he said that everybody receiving Social Security is sucking on a tit? And now he's gooning on veterans? What's next, babies?
Well, that's the thing about people like him. You know, they're going to use any type of rhetoric or any type of disparaging remark that relates to the fulfillment of the social contract between veterans, between the aged, between people who are sick and old, to promote their own agenda. And the trouble is, how many people are going to accept this stuff? I mean, I would dare say between now and a week from today, you're going to see a plethora of similarly outrageous stuff that's going to be pumped into the media or any way they can get it, whether it's internet, television, radio, you name it.
Well, they own it all, so why not?
Well, the thing about it is you've got a majority of the population in this country who are going to accept even some of it as truth. Or calls into question the validity of the social contract and everything it represents. You know, whether it's a football jersey or whether it's a government program to help people who need help or to repay those people who have paid into Social Security and other programs and things of that nature. None of this really surprises me at all. And between now and November, it's going to be an absolute Charlie Foxtrot.
Yeah, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot?
A clusterfuck.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
And the thing is, it's one of those of their own making, Jim. You know, yes, the teabaggers are noisy. Yes, the teabaggers are loud. But they're a minority. But we give them attention as if they were a majority.
Yes, but you know...
What's worse, Jim, is the Obama administration feels compelled to respond to them as if they're a majority.
Well, I think the majority feels... I mean, the Obama administration feels the need to have some type of response. But I wish that their response could be more vitriolic and more strident. And it would try to make these people look like the idiots they really are.
Yeah, punch back.
That's what I'm trying to say. You know, I did see a punch back today about Sarah Palin. Boy, did Vanity Fair let her have it.
Oh, they dropped a rock on her.
And did you see the dialogue in the Palin household? Now, where they got these words from, I don't know. Or that?
No, I didn't see that part.
Oh.
Dish, Jim, dish.
Oh, she definitely has one of the worst potty mouths of any woman I've ever seen.
Well, she's a fundamentalist Christian. Yeah, she's just speaking in tongues.
No, she's not speaking in tongues. She's speaking just absolute filth. Gibberish, and it just indicates from the conversation I saw written on the television screen this afternoon and this morning, really, just what kind of bitch she really is. Like I said before, earlier, these women, like Sarah Palin and another one, I can't remember her name, I mean, I associate those types of women with a word that's used in kennels.
Indeed. And maybe something that has to do with runts.
And I would like, you know, I think the Vanity Fair thing, what did they say, 59% said that she would not be a credible candidate for the presidency?
But I love the 2%, Jim.
What'd they say?
That she's a Muslim.
Sarah Palin was a Muslim?
Yeah, 59% said she wasn't fit to be president. 2% said she's a Muslim.
That is indeed remarkable, sir. That truly is.
You know, there are things out there that you don't want to see and you don't want to know, but on the other hand, it's like driving slow by a car wreck. I want to meet those 2% that think she's a Muslim.
Oh, I would, too. I'd love to talk to them and just and find out exactly, you know, where they're getting their information.
I saw an editorial cartoon today, Jim. And it showed a guy, you know, there's like five people standing, or six people standing at a bus stop. I think I saw this over at BartCop.com. And the guy's reading a newspaper that says, one in five, and the headline says, one in five Americans thinks Obama is a Muslim. And the guy's looking down the line, the people standing next to him at the bus stop, the other five people, and there's three people. There's two guys and a woman look totally normal, just kind of standing there at the bus stop. And then there's a guy wearing short plaid boxer shorts with a T-shirt tucked into it, wearing one of those beanies with a propeller on top.
That's a smart look.
And he's got his hand in a yellow bag with a red label on it that says paint chips.
Paint chips?
Yeah, paint chips, you know, like lead paint.
I understand.
And his little tongue's hanging out of his mouth.
Oh, dear God.
And his pink-white knees are sticking out from those boxer shorts. This is the second time I'm looking at it. The first time I was utterly speechless. I was just ruined. Because, you know, that picture of the guy with the get-a-brain morans that's sort of the patron saint of teabaggers for us now? Well, he's apparently got a cousin. You know, the plaid boxer shorts with the white T-shirt tucked in and the beanie just ruined me. Anybody who wants a really, really good spit-on-the-monitor laugh needs to go over to Bart Cop today and just scroll down about, maybe a sixth of the way and you'll see this thing and it'll lay you low.
Wow. They ought to put him on the front page of GQ or Details, right?
There you go. Under the headline, Teabagger Chic.
It just goes to show how all this crap that is being pumped out is bringing out the very worst in people and the very worst of outcomes. I hate to say it. I really do.
No, I have to struggle with myself, Jim, sometimes not to just put my little forehead in my hand and say, you know what? People like to talk about tipping points environmentally, in terms of oil, in terms of coal, in terms of gas, in terms of pollution, carbon dioxide. But there's a political tipping point, too, and I think we're past it sometimes.
Yeah, I think we are, too.
That there's no getting well from it, and that you know, the at least we can strike up the band and play a merry tune as the ship sinks beneath the wave.
Well, I'm not sure whether it's going to be near my God to thee or London Derriere, but after having listened to the music and the band played on, it isn't going to make that water outside any warmer, is it?
Not hardly.
And, of course, you know, the whole thing is likened to that Titanic scenario in which, well, there just weren't enough lifeboats for the population of that ship. And it's really very sad. I mean, I have a, I, I really have a difficult time in viewing this stuff and trying to absorb some of this visual pablum. And I just have to flip the channel and simply, out of desperation, because I've spent my time in a lot of this shit, and just retreat into the confines of my own dwelling and
I do.
That's when I just punch in like the cat people from 1982. I find it much more edifying to take you to the truth. I really do. I don't know. I guess this conversation isn't making a whole lot of sense tonight. But
oh, it's making more sense than you know, Jim.
Well, I hope so. But, I mean, you know, you get to the point where you see that you just absolutely feel totally helpless and incapable of really doing anything about this stuff. But when you refer to the teabaggers being such a small minority, look back in history. Small minorities have a very nasty habit of having very terrible impacts upon the stream of human history.
Well, that too is true.
And on that note, I'm going to leave you where I found you, as they say, and on to your next caller. And you have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Jim.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. You know what? I haven't had a break so far. I'm going to take a little break. Take a little swig of lemonade. And come back to it. One line open if you want to try to get in. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. By the way, if you've never been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, it's a great time to try that out as well. If you want an enjoyable, interesting read, I've been promising this for some time now, and Reverbo posted it today. Go over to headonradionetwork.com and have a read. One of the things that's about the internet, or at least the part of the internet that I read, is that there's a lot of factual reporting. There's a lot of opinion expressed, but it's not often that you see people actually putting serious skull sweat work into creative writing. And we have a magnificent example of it in serialized form. This is only the first installment from Reverbo. Go over to headonradionetwork.com, and you will see there prominently displayed a picture of a lighter-than-airship by the name of the Silver Pelican. Click on that picture and go to the first installment in Reverbo's offering. See, I'm going there now. I promise, see, I've seen this before, you guys saw it. I promise you will enjoy this. Because this is something different from, just about anything you will read on any website anywhere. Looking for work in a cavalcade of crazy, part one. And there will be a quiz on Friday. And if you're very, very good, we'll figure out what the recipe is to the rum rockaroo. Okay? Yeah. Also, this in from Maura. She says that those 2% who say that Sarah Palin is a Muslim, those 2%, says Maura, are the liberals getting even. Hadn't thought of it that way. But if that's the case, I'm terribly enamored of the notion. So we're going to take a little break and come back, and we're going to march through all of these blinking lights. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is conversation radio that happens only because you decide you want it to happen. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Busy, busy night, and we will go through all the phone calls. I hope you guys are all still there. 6.5 minutes past the hour. By the way, for those of you who are wondering about this past Tuesday and this Thursday, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen of the Green News Report are on vacation this week. Vacations? What the hell is that? They're on vacation this week. I think they went camping or backpacking somewhere, which has got to be a lot of fun. And I hope they enjoyed their trip, and they will be back after Labor Day, and then it's coffee break's over, back on your heads. Okay? Yeah, good. They are missed, to say the very least. They are missed. Now, just to give you a little inducement to go over and have a read of looking for work in a cavalcade of crazy, it starts out, you know, because I'm one of those people who in the bookstore will stand there and read the first paragraph of a lot of books, and I know it makes me seem shallow, but you know, I don't care. I read the first paragraphs of books, and if the first paragraph doesn't get me, it goes back on the rack. I've saved myself a lot of misery that way. Hence the first paragraph of this. And if this doesn't make you want to go and read it, nothing will. This will make you want to go and read it. Part 1. I had just set the controls of my personal airship, the Silver Pelican, on autoglide over the Chesapeake Bay in preparation for another grueling session in front of the iMac in my continuing, though heretofore unsuccessful, quest to find a paying job. The internets, of course, are the preferred application procedure for almost every potential employer, putting as many obstacles between the applicant and hiring manager as possible. Meet or talk to a real person in your dreams. Personal airship, Silver Pelican, autoglide, iMac. Go forth and read, because you will snicker, you'll slap, you'll facepalm yourself. This is, well, I'm proud to have it there. Because, you know, I always had a vision of the horn as something that would be more than just politics, more than just sniping. God, and it's still in the back of my head that someday we'll have a volunteer radio theater effort, you know, the horn radio players, or the horn theater of the air. You can do audio of stuff that's out there in the public domain, like Shakespeare and Aeschylus and Euripides. Euripides, I break at your face. Wouldn't that be fun? There's potential for it to be so much more. So much more. But there's that. And I think, by the way, we're going to be joined by my colleague Rick Smith on tomorrow's program for a bit of an announcement. And I think you're going to be very, very excited by this. And it's something coming along that I know about that I am not prepared to tell you about yet, but is very, very cool. So there's that. And with that, we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, let's see. South Carolina's up 7-0 on Southern Miss. Ohio State's already 14 points up. And Miami's 14 points up on Florida A&M. And Marshall has not started to dig into the negative numbers yet. But we got faith.
We do.
No, like you say, Florida has their two patsies at the first of the year. Then what's the last few years has been their patsy at the end of the year, which is called Florida State. So they fight.
And if Florida State proves to be a patsy this year, they're going to be real upset with that there, Jimbo Fisher.
Ooh. Oh, well, like I said, the one over here, the one I was watching while I was waiting on you was, like I said, I'm watching the South Carolina Southern Miss. And poor old Steve Spurrier, he ain't in trouble, but it's sort of like, Steve, this is your year. You know, everything's in his favor. If he don't win this year, he's in trouble. You know, but that's just, you know, that's our football moment. I'll pass it on by so everybody else can now wake up. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. It's that time of year. After a few years of this, people ought to be accustomed to it by now.
I know. Well, you were talking about Kiffin. Well, like I say, you know, we've had some sniffs here and there, and there's a couple of things that he did that they're investigating from when he was here. But we know we're going to get hit with something, but we don't think it's going to be serious because we think they ain't looking at us. They're looking at Kiffin. You know what I mean? They're sort of like, well, we don't care what you all did. We just want to put another nail or two into Kiffin. And we're like, go ahead. Here, we'll give you a bag of nails and a new hammer. You know? But that's just, you know, that's just the way it seems around here, but we'll see. Okay, let's get on to some fun stuff.
Do let's.
Okay, let's see. One thing is, and I hope more people do it, I saw this on both, like, Big Ed's show and on Oberman's show, where they're starting to list all the stuff that Brother Beck was speaking about the other night, you know, at the apocalypse, whatever you want to call it, you know. Where I'm still waiting to see what the miracle was, because he wants to swear it's those geese. Apparently there's a lot of people up in Washington tell you that miracle happens every day up there. You know, but
this much is true, yes.
Well, and it's interesting now to see him list the lies, because one of them they mentioned was the one you were talking about the fact that, you know what, we keep those things in those boxes filled with xenon and argon gas so they won't decay, but we're going to take it out for Glenn Beck. Don't you worry. We're going to let him play with them.
Well, there's a theory here. I got an email in when I mentioned that Marty wrote in to say the Beckerhead has apparently been watching National Treasure a few too many times and thinks he's Nicolas Cage, which would make him John Voight's son, which actually makes sense.
This is true. But like I say, if you've ever seen anything like on the History Channel and they talk about the documents of the Founding Fathers, hell, those things are locked up better than the anything you can about find, because like I say, they keep those in pressurized, hermetically sealed vaults.
Just like what they put Dick Cheney in at night, right.
Well, you know how it is. He may have the room next door. You never know. Okay, we were talking about people talking on the thing. My question is, where are people like Al Franken? I understand he's a first-year senator, or first-term senator, but it's like, Al, get out there. You're a good talker. You need to be out there talking to people. You know, it's like, okay, from here, our state, Steve Cohen. You've heard Steve Cohen before.
I love Steve Cohen.
Good talk. And it's like, guys, why isn't he on TV? Because, I mean, he goes right at him. Or somebody like, I can't remember the lady's first name, and I apologize, Sanchez from out of California.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she goes,
Loretta.
And I say who I thought of that we used to see years ago, but you know what? Apparently he got on the list that he's a persona non grata, used to be Mr. McDermott out of Washington.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who used to absolutely rip Tom DeLay's butt up one side and down the other.
Well, and in asking these questions, Luke, the question occurs to me, could it be that these guys are sort of, these folks are sort of on the down low by virtue of the efforts of, you know, Harry and Nancy?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, I want these people out there talking. I mean, you know, when
where the hell's Dennis Kucinich lately?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's how it is. It gets to that point where like, oh, you want to talk? We don't want to talk to him. You know what I mean? I'm sure some of these people are asking to come on, like, Meet the Press and this, and they're like, no, we don't want you. You're not on our list. You know, it's like the way the Meet the Press used to be. If you called in and say, hi, I'm Newt Gingrich, they said, come on, we've got a spot for you today. You know, even if you weren't. But, you know, I mean, because when they had Newt on, like, once every month for a year, when he yet doesn't have any job, any standing even in his own party, and you put him on each month. I mean, that's just ridiculous. We're talking about the Iraq, the end of the combat thing in Iraq. You said you know, it ain't gonna be done until they're out of there. Well, gee, we're still waiting on that from some place called Germany and some place called Korea.
That is true.
And that's been 50 years or better. So, but the thing that got me on that is, you know, when they were saying, we want George Bush to get credit, and I said, okay. So he gets credit for Pat Tillman. He gets credit for Shoshana Baker. He gets credit for, and I, what's her name? I cannot think of it.
Lindy England?
No, not the fake rescue.
Oh, yeah, from Palestine, West Virginia. I'm from Palestine. You are not.
I can see her face. I mean, I can't think of her name. But
yeah, Jessica Lynch.
And like I said, good, you get credit for that, too, and remind people about all those fun little stories. You know, that.
Well, George wants credit. George can have credit for a million dead Iraqis.
Oh, yeah.
We tried to give him credit for that for 5 years, and he wouldn't take it.
I know. Well, and like right now. Oh, one other thing before I forget. My favorite one this past week. I finally figured out a new name for Mr. Boner. We should now start calling him Representative Oompa Loompa. Someone was saying there's a black and white. So I said there's, you know, things between black and white. And I said, okay, so that means Boner represents the orange people? And I said, the only orange people I can think of are Oompa Loompas. You know? I think, damn, he's a real tall one, isn't he?
Yeah, I know, but as compared with John Boner, the Oompa Loompas are just kind of beige.
I know, but it was the only thing I could think of was close to. this thing now with Earl going up the East Coast, I want somebody out there reminding people that guess what? FEMA's doing their job for a change. You know, now under a Democrat, they can do their job again. You know, they already had 20 dockets. I think they said they had like 20 sites already set up, ready to take people in. You know, they're having to evacuate from the East Coast. You know, it'd be nice if somebody would remind people that, you know what? When you got a government that actually wants to work, it can work. You know, it's like that. That's to me is one of the biggest tragedies of the Shrubs. Our prison sentence with Shrub as our warden was the fact that here we had FEMA, which for under the 8 years of the Clinton administration, my golly, actually worked and was actually kind of something called proactive. And then under the horse trainer, they apparently decided to shut everything down. It's like, say, yeah, I want to remind people about Katrina. You know, they were doing this 5 year thing. Just remember, people up here, I know you all did too, we were sending stuff to New Orleans that they turned away. You know, we sent ice, we sent food, we sent stuff. It got down to somewhere, I think, in Mississippi or Louisiana, and they were telling them, take it back. We don't need it. You know, because we sent stuff down there like that. Because I remember, you know, for the week after the thing, they were having, you know, take stuff down to the church and such and, you know, in different places, and they'll send it down to the people in New Orleans. And we loaded up trucks of it. But it got down there, and they said, no, we don't need it. Don't worry. The people don't need anything. We're taking care of them. Oh, another thing on Mr. Simpson.
Yeah.
My question is, explain to me why the Obama administration's apparently doing the limbo, bending over backwards to protect him, but all they had to do is say boo, and they threw Van Jones out the window.
Yeah, exactly. And I sat on the story, and I never got around to doing it. There's only one person that has been just as venomously attacked as the right wing can, who has shown the stones of standing up. And that guy's name is Kevin Jennings. And I've met him, and he's a good guy. He's in charge of the Department of Education program against bullying.
And he ain't giving
in to the damn bullies.
Yes,
I mean, could we get Mr. Jennings to do a little coffee klatch with the rest of the Obama administration, with Mr. Obama there saying, this is how you don't, and explain bullying to them? You know, this is very basic stuff, Luke.
Well, I agree. Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's one of those things that I don't know what it is, and I'm sure somewhere down the line we'll dissect it and take it apart and all this. But apparently when they went in there, it's like when they left campaign mode and went into administrative mode, they cut their guts out. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, when somebody tells a lie about you, turn them around, you go on the news and say, that guy's lying. You know, make him prove it. Oh, you know, it's like this thing with I was just watching a minute ago, this guy from up in Alaska. I wonder how many people know the fact that this guy, one of his major things, he wants to get rid of Social Security and Medicare. He thinks they're evil.
You know, I can't help but wonder if anybody does any digging, will we find out that he, like the Palins, was a member of the Alaska Independence Party?
I agree.
Has anybody done that looking yet? Maybe, maybe not.
But you know what I mean? How many people know this is a guy who like, say, is sitting there crying that, you know, that we need to get rid of it? It's like, now I bet you 10 to 1, right, and they're talking about it, is now all of a sudden he's not talking about it. I want somebody sticking a camera in his face asking him about it, and see, let's see if he runs away. Let's see if he pulls Engler, whatever it is. You know, let's see if they run away.
Yeah, Sharon Engel.
Yeah.
Engel.
Yeah, ask her the hard question. See if she runs away from when we catch it on camera. Come on, this should be good.
Amen.
It's some of this stuff with these people that you know, we have a media that apparently can't hold on to a thought for more than 10 seconds at a time. They have to go on to the next thing. It's like, well, let's finish up the whole sentences. You know, we're tired of, you know, this isn't election time. We don't have to talk in three word sentences. You know, we can actually talk about things for a whole minute. You know, ask the whole question. Sometimes these people in the media, you get a feeling that if it's more than three words long, they think they've done something wrong. You know, apparently somebody's in their ear yelling, hurry up, the entire time they're talking to somebody. So, but you know, it's just one of these things that sometimes when you see these people, you just want to ask, you know, where did you learn to be a interviewer or whatever you want to call it? It's like, oh God. Oh, one other quick thing before I forget. Have you seen the new Mr. Bourdain's The Making of India?
I sat down. You know, I did. I watched that Monday night. Mm-hmm. I watched the making of the what was the name of the region? Kerala or
yeah, I think that was it.
There was a making of, and then there was the episode itself. And what I found
is more fun.
Well, the making of was more fun, but it's fascinating how something that looks like the barely manageable chaos turns into such a damned fine travel log documentary.
I know. Yeah, I mean his shows. Like I say, to me, they're travel logs. I mean, you know, I remember years ago we used to go to like the Coliseum or something. They'd have somebody come in with a film and show you the travel log going through the country. That's what his shows are to me. They're travel logs. I mean, he uses food,
but they're so wildly different, say, from Andrew Zimmern, who is apparently a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no the attitude, the sense of respect. Zimmern tries to do it, but he doesn't have the
geek factor.
Well, I don't know what it is, Luke. It's that sense of you get the idea that Tony Bourdain is not bullshitting you when he says that, you know, he knows he's got a great gig and he's going to make the best out of it.
Oh yeah, the thing you can tell with him is he's enjoying himself.
On Monday night they ran the Panama episode before they ran the making of Kerala and the Kerala episode itself. And the Panama episode was fascinating because, you know, Bourdain makes no bones about the fact that he's an ex-junkie, an ex-coke and crack freak, you know, all of that. And in the Panama episode, they take him to a cocaine burning and let him set fire to the big mound of tons of cocaine. And at some point he says something like, you know, 15 years ago, this was the answer to my prayers. And he's honest about it.
Well, I mean, the one I enjoyed this past little bit has been the one where he did the return to Beirut.
Oh, that was wonderful. And the one thing I didn't ask him on the show because I was trying to be respectful, and I didn't want him to do anything, you know, start another flame war with anybody. My God, Rachel Ray is on the Travel Channel now, and that's got to be making him a little crazy. They'll have Sandra, what's her name, over there anytime. But I wanted to ask him, you know, this Adam Richman character, you know, man versus food.
I know.
I really wanted to ask him, isn't that just a little offensive to you? Isn't that, you know, another box to be checked on the ugly American scorecard? Hey, world, here's a show where we're going to gratuitously eat things and vomit.
I know. I mean, if you like that and you want something that's more sensible, go over to the Food Channel and watch a guy called Guy Fieri. Guy at least does it, you know, he doesn't. Like you say, he doesn't try to shove half a plate of food in his
mouth. Half a cow in his face, yeah.
Yeah. he at least goes out and he'll visit different odd restaurants per se. You know what I mean? But he what was his diners, drive-ins, and dives or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I'm so ashamed of myself, but I'm a pathetic little fanboy. I've come up with a concept, and I want to be the guy who does it, but I'm not smart enough and not cute enough for TV. But I've got a concept for a killer TV show. Okay. And it would run perfectly right after Bourdain. Or maybe right before. I don't care. But
what's your idea? Well, generally, you'll give it all away, but what generally?
I want to do a show a theme. Well, see, I'm going to give it away, and it'll show up on the Food Channel, and I'll sit here, you know, kicking myself, you know, for the rest of my life. Oh, what the hell? Ancient food.
Oh, okay.
I want to look at cultures around the world and look at how their food changed.
How where it started, how it got to where what we eat now.
Well, yeah, with particular emphasis on the year 1491.
What did Columbus bring with him?
Right. And look how far it went. Because, you know, if you watch that Kerala episode of Bourdain, and every scene had someone cooking and chopping copious amounts of chili peppers into some delightfully, you know, and just horrifyingly hot curry dish.
I know.
Well, you know what? Sorry, you can't have that before 1491 because you can't have those chilies.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that most people don't realize what foods weren't here, what's been brought into this country, you know what I mean, from other countries.
Or into the rest of the world from the Americas.
Yeah, exactly.
I sat down in a little Afghan restaurant in D.C. Last time I was there, and I had a magnificent meal made of mashed pumpkin, and it was described as a traditional Afghan dish. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting there eating it thinking, this is only traditional post 1500 AD.
Well, you know, there's certain foods that most people, you know, each region has. You know, we talked about ramps before.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, it's hard, because it's hard to put these in preserve, you can't preserve these too well. But have you ever had pawpaw?
Oh, I love pawpaws.
But, you know, I mean, most people, if you mention it, they don't know what it is.
No, they, you know, maybe they heard that way down yonder in the pawpaw patch, and they have no idea what pawpaw is.
Like I said, the way I always remember, the way I always use the term described is prairie bananas.
Yeah, or Michigan bananas, or, right. And they are and they're ugly as hell on the outside when they're ripe.
Oh, God.
Or wild persimmons.
Mm-hmm.
There's wild plums that grow in the South, and man, they're good. And every now and then you run across something, and my brother-in-law was telling me, I mean, they're just a vine that climbs along a tree, and it's a grape of some sort. And he told me, he said, we used to call them possum grapes.
Hmm.
But they're real grapes, and they're as sweet as can be, and they're wonderful. And so
it's interesting, though, sometimes to go on the web and look around and see where you have festivals. Like, there's a pawpaw festival, and, you know, there are ramp festivals and all these different foods that, you know, like I say, we don't think of it as being unusual because we're around here, but I'm sure probably there's stuff out in the West Coast or stuff up north that if we looked around, we'd see stuff and we go, what the hell is that?
I tell you, if you want to have some fun, when you've got a minute, Google something called an Indian turnip.
Hmm.
And, of course, the white folks appended the word Indian to it as a slur. It's kind of like a Jerusalem artichoke. Again, a slur.
Oh,
but yeah, but fascinating plants.
Oh yeah. I mean to bring something back. We'll go back to politics for a minute. We'll get back. Leave the travelogue area for a moment. It's just amazing watching these idiots. And I'm sorry that it's idiots sitting here crying about, oh, we're going to have Middle East peace. And I'm sitting there going, you aren't even talking to Hamas. You won't even let them talk to you. And they represent about 70% of the Palestinians. And you think you're going to have peace? I said, just wait about a month when they start rebuilding, start going back to rebuilding in the West Bank. And our friendly pet Palestinian, excuse the term, is going to be dead or dead without still being breathing. Because once they start building, and I can't think of his name, all of a sudden mine's going blank, the one who's in the peace talks from Palestine, or the figurehead, Once the Israelis start building, he's gone. Or I mean, he may stay there, but he ain't gonna be even talking for 5% of the people of the Palestinians. And we're gonna be sitting there crying, oh, we've got a peace agreement. Yeah, we got a peace agreement with 5%. The other 95% will look at us and laugh. I mean, you know, it's just amazing the way they're talking. Like, yeah, we're talking to the main Palestinians. It's like, no, you're not. You're talking to the fringe. I'm sorry, you don't like Hamas, but Hamas is the people who stayed there and worked it. I'm sorry, but they did. You know, they stayed there and worked with the people of Palestine, and they've got them on their side for the most part. And you all pretend like, well, we can't talk to them because they're evil. Well, gee, I guess I wonder how we're perceived in that part of the world. I'd say we're probably listed as under the term evil. Because all the Israelis have to do is snap their fingers, and we go, yes, anything you want.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Is more like it. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, it's like we always go back to that last big fight they had. You know, everybody said, oh, it's the Palestinians. It's like, yeah, we don't talk about that week before when the Israelis were bombing the beaches. When the Palestinians were out there in bathing suits. Oh, yeah, that looked real dangerous. But we don't talk about that because that was the Israeli government. They never do anything bad.
Well, they're incapable of it.
I know. Well, but I'm offline right now, so I've got to get a computer this weekend.
Oh no!
Yeah, my other one came up and had the nice little message. Please insert restoration disk. It's like no. That's okay. My hamster finally gave up apparently. So.
Well, they do have a way of doing that.
So I've got to make some arrangements, and I'm going to buy a new computer this weekend. I'm hoping.
New desktop or a new lappy or what?
A lappy. Well, I'll tell you the dirty little trick I can pull, unfortunately. It's not a trick, but you know what I mean. I have a niece, my lovely niece. She works for something called Home Shopping Network.
No, score.
Yeah, so she can buy me one at her discount, hallelujah.
Thank God for employee discounts.
Hey, so she lives down in Tampa, so I'll have to look on the weekend. They're having a thing, and I'll tell her which one I want. She'll buy it, and I'll send her the money, and everything will be good. Life is much better then. But oh yeah, I'm gonna get a Lappy. I've had a desktop forever, and I think I'm gonna go to Lappy this time.
Well, if you can get one, the new Intel Core i7s are just real. I mean, Jim Day, quick. They're quick.
Well, we just have to see what we can afford. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like say if I could pick the right damn six numbers, I'd buy it. Do you know how it is?
No, I know. In fact, I got to check my six numbers. I keep, you know, one of these days, it's got to happen.
Somewhere down that list, you got to come up.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be able to go on air and not have to do a pitch and just say, hey, I paid for it. Never mind. You know, it's taken care of.
Life is good. I just transferred some money from the other account. Thank you kindly.
Yeah.
All right, but I tell you what, I know we've been on too long, so y'all have a good week. Hey, are you on Monday?
No, I'm taking Monday.
I go right ahead. You know, I know it may be against your religion, but please pull for Virginia Tech. I want them to beat Boise State up and down the field about 200-3 would be a good score.
Oh, that's going to be tough.
I know, but I'm just so tired of the ESPN guys telling me that if Boise State wins this game, they're national champions already. We don't have to ask any other questions. Because apparently they have no other schedule. You know, once they get past this game, it's over. You know, the rest of their schedule, like say, the Sisters of the Blind and Mute and Crippled could probably take it. And it's like, I'm sorry.
Well, I'll work on it, Luke, but I can't make any promises. You don't know how badly I despise Virginia Tech.
I understand. Well, then just look when you watch it. Just pull against Boise State. You know how it is. It's like when we watch Alabama or Florida play somebody, we just have to go, I'm pulling for the SEC school.
There you go. Exactly. Well, it's like Pitt playing Utah. There ain't nobody I hate worse than Pitt, but I got to root for him against Utah. It's hard to root for Pitt, and it's hard to root for any team that's coached by a guy with a porn stash.
Well, like you said, you said Rich Rod's pretty much gone, you think?
Oh, I think he's toast. Especially after all the NCAA stuff. They may can him mid-season.
Well, ours around here, like, say, like, I think you and mine's going blank again. Sorry.
Sandra.
We're talking about it. Our big thing around here is waiting to see when the athletic director gets canned. Mr. Hamilton?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, he's the one that brought in the NKIF, and he's the one that fired.
Well, yeah, that one's due and owing. The only right thing he did was bringing in Bruce Pearl, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's pretty much been it right now. And they're just sitting there waiting. We would have lost our baseball coach this year, but we figured he didn't want to fire two coaches in a year. That our baseball coach didn't even get us to 500 this year. And it's sort of like we're just waiting to see if he lasts out when the season starts in spring, if he lasts the full season. So, but Hamilton is one. He's pissed off everybody every time he's.
Now, who do you guys start with, football wise?
We are playing Tennessee Martin, our 1AA team.
Everybody gets one.
Hey, that's our. Hey, well, look at this way. The next 2 weeks we play Oregon and we play Florida.
That'll be fun.
So, like I say, when you play two teams that are essentially in the top 10 for the next 2 weeks, you're doing well. Our biggest one this year is, as usual, my favorite one, though, is always watching the Georgia game. Because the Georgia game last year, we were told we were going to get beat by 3 touchdowns if we were lucky, and that was the first half. And we ended up beating them by 25 points. But, of course, you know, as we all know, Mark Richt walks on water.
Oh, he's Jesus' best friend.
I know. So we just keep on. Everybody around here keeps wondering.
Wonder if they're going to be running that don't drink and drive ad down at UGA this season.
Oh, it's like I say, you just got to wonder. You don't hear anything at all about that. I don't even know who they picked as his successor. But that had to be a hoot and a half down there. But like I say, they threw the blanket over it. And nobody knew about it. But let me get you going, bud.
All right, you take care, Luke. Good luck with the new with the new misery box.
I know. Well, like I say, hopefully next week sometime, probably the end of the week, I'll be able to listen and talk to you at the same time. Hallelujah.
All right. Take care.
See you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Luke calling from the hills of Appalachia down in East Tennessee. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
What's up, Juanita?
Well, I want you to ask Gladys to please take care of herself.
I will tell Gladys to do that.
Yeah. And I wanted to say something after hearing Cossack talking. I wanted to thank him. You know how we thank our troops and all for their service? But I want to thank him for protesting the Vietnam War.
Thank you, Juanita. And I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
I really do, because I said, you know, all of that changed. A lot of stuff that was hidden back then was dug up and put out in open air. Not just about that, but just the whole way of life, all that hypocrisy was exposed. And, you know, because like the 50s were dark ages. And
yes, they were.
And, you know, and but I just want to thank him for doing that. I think it's, I think they served our country well. Our youth, you know, changed the country. And God bless them. But, and I, you know, I wanted to be a hippie so bad. But I had a little baby and I had this and that and the other. I had all kind of surgery and all kind of stuff. And I didn't get to be one, but, I probably wouldn't be a very good one, I don't know, but I really did. I wanted to be a hippie. But I say God bless him, and I thank Cossack for doing that.
That's awful sweet of you, Juanita.
Well, I'm just so sweet, I can't help myself. No, I think that was wonderful of him to do that, because it took a lot of nerve, you know, a lot of courage. If you look at the Democratic convention in 68?
Yep.
My gosh, the way they were done. And it just took a lot of courage anyway. But let's see, I wanted to say about, you know, Palin, you know, did you hear her answers back about the article written about her?
No.
Oh, boy. Well, I think she was on Hannity's radio show, and just to make it short and sweet, she said, you know how she's so clever? And she said...
Oh, isn't she?
Huh?
I said, oh, isn't she?
Yeah. She said, I don't read some of it because I know that those who are impotent and limp and gutless, and then they go on, they're anonymous, they're sources that are anonymous, and impotent, limp, and gutless reporters take anonymous sources and cite them as being factual. Well, a lot of people are taking that as kind of subtly not very nice.
I understand that. And by the way, you're getting thanks from Cossack in the chat room.
Okay. anyway, then Megan McCain has written a book, and she says some of the same things about Sarah and her husband being so rambunctious.
Well, there, the whole Vanity Fair article, you can find it online, is worth your time to read, Juanita.
Yeah,
it really is.
I think I'll look it up and read it.
You'll be horrified.
And then I wanted to say another thing is like, Cossack was talking about governor's race. I did read something that gave me hope today. Lawton Child's son has dropped out as an independent, and he's going to support Alex Sink. And I was concerned that he would take a lot of votes away from her because Lawton Child was one of our greatest governors. And people down here still remember him, even some people in the panhandle. And so I'm hoping that Alex Sinks can win. And we'll have at least something, because it's like Cossack said, you know, we're just doomed with that other guy. And, oh, one more thing is the Republicans are planning on shutting down the government when they get in power.
I have no doubt of it.
I don't know the reason, but, and you know that ISA guy?
Because Juanita, they'll shut down the government and say, see, that black man shut down the government.
Yeah. Well, you know that ISA guy from California?
Oh, yeah.
Nasty. First of all, I just want to say they were talking about the richest people in the Congress, and, next to John Kerry, he's the most rich. He's rich. They're like, you know, up toward $500,000 or more. And this guy, you heard what he said. He said, I can't wait to get hold of that subpoena power.
Yep, that's the truth.
And he is a nasty, nasty man. Anyway.
John Fox just chimed in. And said, tell Juanita that being a hippie is in the heart and it's never too late.
Well, I was always, you know, I was always oddball.
You know, there's nothing odd about wanting to live a life in peace.
Right.
Now, me, I'm not so keen on patchouli, but the rest of it I can get down with.
It really is a deep subject, what the young people that, you know, the people that protested the war, how things changed so much, and, you know, so much hypocrisy was exposed by them. And it really, really and truly, the 50s were dark ages.
Well, for anybody that wasn't a direct recipient of white or male privilege, you're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, it's just the attitude of people. Just like I went to school with a lot of girls that when they got married, they had, about 3 months later, they would have like 8-pound babies, premature babies.
Mm-hmm.
That was what,
right.
Be honest about it.
Yeah.
And a lot, just.
With the tinkling soundtrack of the theme from A Summer Place in the background.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to let you go, and you have a good evening. And again, please tell Gladys to please, please take care of herself.
I'll tell her that you will chase her down if she doesn't.
Okay.
All right, Juanita, you
all
take
right.
care, dear.
You
bye
too.
Now.
Bye-bye.
Juanita calling from Central Florida, and nope. No. All right. Lines are all cleared because there are people who don't have any patience, but that'll happen. Or for various reasons need to hang up. William writing in and saying, speaking of protesting the Vietnam War, in 1967 when I got my date to take the physical at age 18. It's quite an experience. I was in Chicago, just 20 miles out of the city, and everyone got a train ticket, and everyone on the train was born the same day of the same year. Once you board the train, you're there for hours wearing just your underwear and shoes. I could not get out of that place fast enough, and I rode in sitting next to a fellow who was real nervous, and at the end of this experience, we were offered a free army meal. I headed down the 10 flights of steel stairs and heard a voice, and it was the same fellow who sat next to me on the train asking where I was going. I said they didn't say we had to take the meal. I'm headed for the Chicago train station, and he was right behind me. William says, I did my share of protesting back then. Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, with the last few moments of the program this evening, I really don't feel like we've done justice to the issue of the, remember the word, the Mariner, the Mariner disaster. It's one of those moments that reminds you that karma really is a bitch. The day before the Mariner platform blew, lo and behold, they had him a little rally in Houston. Thousands and thousands of oil industry workers rallied there at a convention center or some such. And they were going to protest the Obama administration's offshore drilling moratorium. This report comes from the Financial Times. It says, companies ranging from Chevron to Apache bust up in up to 5,000 employees to the Houston Convention Center to underline to Washington the industry's contribution to the country. Thanks for the cancer oil industry. Thanks for the PCBs. Thanks for the toxins. Gosh, we'll never forget your contribution to the country, oil industry. But then this quote from Barbara Diane Haygood, senior landman for Mariner Energy, a small company. She said,
I have been in the oil and gas industry for 40 years. And this administration is trying to break us. The moratorium they imposed is going to be a financial disaster for the Gulf Coast employees, and Gulf Coast residents.
Oops. Oops. And by the way, yeah, there is a spreading slick. Because while it was originally reported, and I'm sure Mariner had a hand in it, oh, there was no production going on at the time. Liars. It was in production at the time of the fire. Apache Corporation recently purchased Mariner in a multi-billion dollar deal. And guess what? Same, different day. Yeah, a mile-long oil sheen is now reportedly visible where the Mariner platform exploded this morning in the Gulf. Vermilion, remember these, Vermilion Oil Rig 360 was producing about 58,800 gallons of oil and 900,000 cubic feet of gas per day. Sorry about that million-gallon thing. I guess that just sort of... my apologies, I was factually incorrect. Hey, you know what? You could listen to a year of right-wing radio and never hear any right-wing gas bag say what I just said. But yeah, there's a sheen, there's a slick, there's a spill. And there's a spill because just like the rest of the oil industry, Mariner was a scofflaw. In 2010, Mariner had two violations, totaling a fine of $55,000 paltry dollars. And in 2007, another violation for $30,000. That's Mariner Energy. Not necessarily the platform, just Mariner Energy. Then again, there's Apache Energy, which just bought Mariner. They've had 22 violations, according to the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management's Outer Continental Shelf Civil Criminal Penalties Program. 22 violations since 1998, 12 years, 22 violations, that's about a little less than two a year. They've totaled over $1.74 million in fines. And just this year, hey, wait a minute, I think we've seen this movie before. Just this year, they were fined $435,000 for removing a key piece of equipment from a sump system, which then, according to the report, this is a quote, could not automatically maintain oil at a level sufficient to prevent discharge into the Gulf of Mexico. Apache Corp., two violations 2010, $690,000. Two violations 2008, $135,000. Three violations 2007, $486,000. Five violations 2006, $216,000. Three violations in 2005, $122,000. You get the idea. Meanwhile, Mariner, is having recently bought by Apache, is whining that they will be impacted by increased regulatory oversight. Now, obviously, there's a question of, what do we do? I would like to take this moment to damn the generation previous to me for not getting serious about this stuff the first time that the Saudis and the rest of OPEC held us hostage. They thought getting serious about oil meant that we needed to find more of it nearer to home. Wrong. Getting serious about dependence on oil, on foreign oil, you know, that's what you always hear. Well, we've got to work on our dependence on foreign oil, even though the vast majority of that so-called foreign oil comes from Canada. Tar sands, anyone? What it means to get serious about one's dependency on foreign oil is to get serious about one's dependency on oil. I know that may sound a bit redundant, but it is true in a very simple fashion. You start figuring out a way to not need it so badly. And back in the early to mid 70s, we had a cushion in which we could have begun to do that. But we weren't up for it. No, we weren't. Ronald Reagan took the solar panels off the roof of the White House. They weren't doing any harm. They weren't in security's way. It was a symbolic gesture to let the oil companies know that, by God, the Republicans were back in power and it was business as usual. And we have suffered ever since. I don't know if it will be possible in our lifetimes or the lifetimes of my children and our children and grandchildren to assess the manifest damage that was done to this nation by Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush. I don't know. But we can begin to sort of view it through a glass darkly. And the darkness on that glass is the sheen of a smear of crude. And the tarry stain of filthy coal. You see, that's what it boils down to. We have questions to answer. And a lot of people say, well, you know, we'll have to answer to the generation that made America the greatest country in the world and provide us the greatest standard of living in the world. No. No, the questions we have to answer are the questions that will be asked by those children and those grandchildren and those great-grandchildren. Who, if this nation is still extant, will ask, why, knowing you had a problem, why didn't you make even a rudimentary attempt to solve it? And they will have nothing but our history to judge us. To a small extent, maybe somewhere out on a hard drive, they'll have this. and your words so that people can know 100 years from now that there were people who desperately wanted the problem solved and who understood that things like wind and solar, geothermal, tidal energy, God knows what, could have been the answer. Who will know that we wanted those answers, those questions answered, but that we were prevented from answering them by people who were too entrenched among the filthy hydrocarbon sodden elite for us to ever have any meaningful work done, any real accomplishments. That's the frustrating thing, isn't it? Where we want to be is a place that we could be right now. And for all the right-wingers who talk about how great America is, and for all the fools who got misty-eyed when all those Beckerheads who shook their heads like the little bobbleheads that they are, when Glenn Beck said, George Washington's out there. Oh, Jesus, I just love it. It's true that he is. But just as if Jesus Christ returned to the earth now, yesterday, they wouldn't recognize him. Because their only vision of America going forward is that of an America looking backward. You know, Nicole Williamson has that wonderful line in John Borman's Excalibur, where he says, "Remember, remember, for it is the doom of men that they forget." Kind of sounds like a male version of Katharine Hepburn, come to think about it. But it's true. It is the doom of humankind that we forget. The progress of humanity is a constant struggle to remember. The ancients knew that the world was round. But for 1,000 years, blind, ignorant, hate-filled superstition enforced by religion convinced Europe that it was flat. And 99% of the mercenaries who sailed with Christopher Columbus were quite sure that at some point they were going to come to a place where they just fell off the world. Surgeries were performed in ancient Egypt and among the Greeks and the Romans that we would not, again, as a result of the enforced ignorance, bigotry, and superstition of the church, be able to perform for 1,700 years. It is the doom of men that they forget. And we are engaged now in a desperate struggle not to forget. And one of the first things that we need to remember as we contemplate the doom that the hydrocarbon industry hands us every day is that we could have been, less than a generation ago, well on the road to solving the problem. But we were stopped from it by that hydrocarbon-sodden elite. And yes, by our own short-sightedness. By the fact that we waited for somebody else to get it done instead of us. When all along, the only hope we ever had was ourselves. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show this evening. I certainly did. It blows my mind to see all six of these lines lit up, even if some of you don't have the patience and give up. It absolutely it blows me away. One of these days, I'm going to have to expand the show. But I'm not going to do it until somehow or another we know that the horn's survival is guaranteed to one degree or another. I hope that day comes sooner rather than later. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. John Fox, our chief engineer, web designer, webmaster. All around good guy and wonderful host in his own right. I'll have to talk to him about that arm twisting for my upcoming absence, if that's possible. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. None of this happens without the White Rose Society. It's that simple. And Ben has been tireless in his dedication, though tiring it has been. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com is our Southeast correspondent. And he also writes at Crooks and Liars and does a darn fine job of it. Go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and read Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy, The Serial, Part 1. I think by the end of the second paragraph, or at least the third, you, like me, will want your very own lighter-than-airship. Silver Pelican is, however, taken. My head writer is David in Tennessee. These programs continue to come your way because of your contributions to keep it going, as well as the contribution of the hardest-working people, the bravest people that I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Also, AppalachiaRising.org. Go and learn why and where and when and how Appalachia is rising. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I said as the program ended last night that I wasn't quite done with the topic, and I'm not, although a bunch of news is sort of busted out all over the place elsewhere. I still want to do the comparison and contrast between the guy who invaded the Discovery Channel headquarters last night and the manifesto of the Jim David Adkison,
the guy who shot up the Unitarian Universalist congregation a couple of years back. Because there's a big difference. On the one hand, there is the guy yesterday that the right-wingers were quick to run out and claim, hey, look, it's a domestic terrorist, and he's a liberal. Of course, he wasn't. Anybody that talks about immigration the way that guy did was no liberal. Never mind. But anyway, I think we should do that. On the other hand, a general warning, I suppose, that I don't know how long this will last. No, we don't have any thunderstorms blowing through. This time it's just the tired and sick computer here that that runs things production-wise. It needs help. And I think our connectivity is kind of squirrely, too. I think we've got DNS server issues, but never mind. You know, there's a world out there where the so-called talent behind the microphone doesn't even know what a DNS server is. Not me. Oh, no. I had to learn. Every time I think about one of these things that I actually know what it means now, I have to think fondly of folks like Peter Godbold and Ben Birch, who, by virtue of the fact that this by necessity network runs on a wing and a prayer, and not so many prayers, really, when you consider where I'm coming from, I got to learn some really cool stuff. Unfortunately, I learned enough cool stuff to be creeped out by things when they go sideways here. Question coming in the chat room. How's Agnes? I fear I'm going to have to get the Thorazine darts and the blowgun out because Agnes is doing too much. Not that I'm a doctor or anything, and I don't even play one on the radio, but she had major surgery last week, and she's off to a PTO meeting tonight. She walks very slowly right now because a lot of stuff hurts, but she's off to a PTO meeting tonight, and she knows that I'm kind of pissed about it. But I have to, Bob, honey. It's necessary. Just right in the side of the neck, and she'll finally go to bed and get some rest. You know, you can't really heal so well without rest. You got to get up and move around. I understand that. But you don't have to. You don't go right back to normal in a matter of days. Your body will tell on you. And I keep telling her that. Of course, she's a nurse. She just went pro and, in other words, took care of only her family when we started having one. But she knows. She knows. And she knows this is driving me crazy. Oh, no, Zatoichi. No, there's no getting her liquored up. No, there's pain medicine involved. And she won't so much as smell a bottle of vanilla extract if she's got an aspirin in her. Don't ask. Jesus God. So that's how Agnes is. And she doesn't make any big deal about it. People ask her and they tell her. I haven't said anything about it just because I didn't feel like giving the gory details was necessary. Agnes had a full hysterectomy. But yesterday, it was today. See, it all begins to run together after a while. She'd had a lot of problems for a long time, and this finally got done, and it was, the doctor told me that she was a train wreck inside. And so earlier today, she was downtown doing things that she ought not have been doing, but that she deems necessary. When one of the delightful ladies in town asked her why it was she wasn't willing to do this, that, or the other thing, and Agnes looked at her and said, "Listen, you know, I just had major surgery." "Really? What?" And she said, "I had a complete hysterectomy." And then this.
Oh, honey, that's terrible. Do you still feel like a woman?